Hey, this is the King of Bros, and you're listening to Saw Monsters Sound Off.
It's business time, baby.
The Saw Monster Sounds Off.
My client!
Mama Monster!
Conquered the street!
This doesn't make any sense.
Your title belt is made of leather. You're not a real vegan.
Fat! Delete!
You haven't been beat up properly! Woo!
How about that? The King of Bros, Matt Riddle, showing some sound off love there. Thank you to Paul Lee, one of our listeners, for getting that shout out. That was very cool. There's a name to watch out for, by the way. How that guy is not already a gigantic star in pro wrestling, I'll never know. But he will be in due time, whether it's in Japan or in the U.S. Believe me, he will be a big, big star. Also, how about that John Jones fight last night? Winning the championship and calling out Brock Lesnar at UFC 214. Told Brock, if you want to know what it feels like to get your ass kicked by a guy 40 pounds lighter, get your ass back to the octagon. And Brock responded early this morning. Brock has spoken, and he said, be careful what you wish for, young man. That comes directly from Brock Lesnar. Lots of excitement for the fight. Potential fight I see online. I'm sure some of these are the same people who say that they can't take a pro wrestling match seriously with Brock against somebody like a CM Punk or a Daniel Bryan because they're too small. And yet here you have John Jones, a light heavyweight. If he were in WWE, he would be able technically to wrestle on 205 Live. And believe me, that fight, if it happens, is going to do gigantic business. Probably the biggest business of any UFC show all year. Which just goes to show you that the right fight, the right match, with the right people and personalities, doesn't matter how big or small they are, it can draw. Whether it's a 205-pound guy or a 305-pound guy, it doesn't really matter. You give people a fight or a match they want to see, and they'll pay money to see it. I do think Jones wins that fight. I mean, I'm no fight expert, but I've seen John Jones fight, and yeah, I don't like the guy personally, but he's a hell of a fighter. Some say the best of all time. I'm not in a position to say, but I think he wins. I don't think in this case the fact that Brock is so much bigger is necessarily a predictor that he's going to win handily. I mean, if I had to make an early prediction on this fight, if it were to happen, I'd probably put my money on John Jones. You know, that's a big money fight for UFC. In a year where they really have not had a whole lot of big money fights. I will say, that was quite the little performance by John Jones last night in that post-fight interview. He would fit right in WWE with that acting job. That was just top-notch stuff right there. If Brock wants the fight, and obviously he does, the rumor has been December. And again, now you get into the whole thing about when did he re-enter the USADA drug testing pool, because if he hasn't, you know, he may not be able to. You know, the time-wise, he just may not be able to fight by then. Some say he's already back in the testing pool. But let's say that all gets worked out. You know, the rumor is December, and then what it really boils down to is Vince McMahon. Vince McMahon would have to sign off on it. Brock is still under contract until WrestleMania next year. Do you let Brock go in there and risk getting his ass kicked, you know, by a light heavyweight, no less, as the champion? You know, he is the Universal Champion, right? He does have one of the top titles in WWE, whatever that means to people. I don't think, personally, he makes it to December as the Universal Champion. I think there's a really good chance he drops it at SummerSlam without getting beat. But we'll see. And then you have Daniel Cormier. I watched that fight last night. And, you know, I hear Cormier a lot on commentary. He does a lot of announcing as well. And I'm sure, you know, when his fight career is over, he'll transition into that. He's very good at that. But I know, I don't have to be the biggest fight fan in the world to know the hatred that these two have had for each other, and Cormier, it seems real. Like, a lot of these guys, they pretend they hate each other, and when the fight is over, oh, they hug, and it's all performance art. But Cormier really seems like he has hated this man for years, and man, I mean, have you ever seen a more depressing post-fight interview? That was one of the saddest things I've ever seen. I mean, part of it was the fact that he was still knocked loopy. He didn't have all of his bearings. He got knocked the hell out. But he was crying. He didn't know what to say. He said, is it really a rivalry if I, you know, basically I get my ass beat twice by the same guy? It was like he was putting himself down. That guy should be on suicide watch after that fight. That was so sad. And one more wrestling-related UFC note coming out of the show last night. I saw this morning, Chris Cyborg, who won her fight last night, tweeted at Becky Lynch, and she put the hashtag SummerSlam, so there's something going on here. I don't know if they're just having fun or if there's actually something planned, but she's certainly teasing that she may show up at SummerSlam or maybe trying to put a match together with Becky for SummerSlam, but they've been going back and forth, so we'll see where that goes. Blurring the lines here between WWE and UFC, a lot of that happening lately. I remember a time where Dana White was adamantly against that. He did not want to blur the lines between pro wrestling and MMA. He said pro wrestling is fake, MMA is real. You don't want people to start second-guessing things in MMA and thinking things are fake, even though some people already do. And it's funny, we seem to be getting more of that now. A lot of crossover here going on. Anyway, this is episode 506, I should probably mention that, of the Solid Monster Sounds Off here for Sunday, July 30th, 2017, the final July Sound Off for this year. I am the Solid Monster. Thank you to Mish and Joey Numbers. I want to give them a shout-out here for having me back on Wrestling Soup this past week. Couldn't believe it was over 2 years since I did a show together with those guys. We always have fun. And this show was no different. You could check that out in the Soupy archives they have there on WrestlingSoup.com. It's funny, me and Mish at the end were talking about Fire Pro World. He had no idea there was a new Fire Pro game out. So I sort of broke the news to him on the air, and we talked about maybe playing like a kind of like an online multiplayer thing, which I've not done. I've not done any sort of multiplayer gaming through Steam on my computer, which is where I have the game. But we're going to try to get something going here in the next few weeks. I've been a little busy with other things I'll get into in a second, but a lot of fun. Definitely go back and check that show out. Also want to show some love for Audible. Thank you, by the way, to everybody who's had such nice things to say about the interview I did with Justin Roberts. Even some people who maybe took issue with things that he said, they've had positive things to say about the interview itself. It was really good. I'm really happy with how it turned out. We got, you know, a decent amount of time, too, to talk, well over an hour. So you can check out the full interview. It's somewhere around 20,000 views now or more on our YouTube channel. Plus, I pushed it out to the feed. And I think TV Tracks cut up a bunch of clips that are on his channel. So lots of different ways to watch the interview. The full one, though, is on the YouTube channel. Please subscribe if you haven't already done so. And if you want to read the book or have the book read to you, I guess, you can get the audiobook. It is Best Seat in the House is the title. The Justin Roberts book is up on audible.com. Use our link and you can get the book for free as part of your Audible trial for 30 days. audibletrial.com/solomonster. Even if you cancel the trial, if it's not for you on day 10 or day 29, you decide, you know what, I want to cancel my trial and not get billed, you still get to keep your one free audio book. And it can be the Justin Roberts book. So audibletrial.com/solomonster. It's also a great way to support the show. As is a PayPal donation, you can always make one on thesolomonster.com. $10 or more will get you a wrestling nickname and a shout-out. Thank you very much. As we do roll call here to John, Loose Cannon Lopez, Deadpool, James Herrera, Beast Mode, Brock Joseph, Out of Control, Cody Thomas, The Florida Freebird, Bryant Becerra, The Dark Serpent, Derek Gibbs, Luis Hercules Hernandez, Ladies Man, Levi Daly, Sean Nasty Boy Nilsson, Mass Grave, Micah Harshaw, Raymond the Mountie Medina, The Prince of Pleasantville, and Nelio Crockett, who, so nice, he had to donate twice. Thank you very much for that. Velvet Revolver, Robert Murray, Aim for the Head, Andrew Jorlog, Brian the Cleaver Carpenter. I gotta come up with like a special donation for the people who donate like more than once in a week. I got to come up with something. The Chicago Slayer, Willie Eichard, The Main Attraction, Jackson Scott, Stephen Handyman Halistick, Better Than Raw, Robert Michalczyk. We have the Baltimore Baller, Trey Parker, the Malaysian Mastermind, Samuel T, Austin Positive Power Ireland, the Brooklyn Bombers, Jamel and Isaiah Walker. Happy birthday to Jamel, by the way, one half of the Bombers, who turned 41 years young this week. I hope you didn't mind me mentioning that. He did put that in the email, so I assume not. But happy birthday, brother. Also, happy 25th birthday to Davis the Empire Enos. Longtime listener, first-time donator to the show. So happy birthday to Davis. Beach Boy James Alexander. happy birthday to you as well, my friend. And a very happy birthday shout out to Zach House of Pain Hulker, the man behind our annual Royal Rumble pool on Facebook. Thank you for all of your hard work, and here's hoping that you have a kick-ass day. So thank you to everybody who made a donation this week, and the ones who didn't, too. I appreciate you all. We have a new shirt up. I know it's been many months. We have a new shirt up in the store on Pro Wrestling Tees, prowrestlingtees.com/Solomonster Sounds Off. It is the... I'm sure you've seen the ad by now. I posted it on Twitter and on Facebook. The Solo Mountie. Bad mounting WWE since 2007. I have to thank Vincent for the inspiration for the shirt. And also thank you to Steve. You can find him on Twitter at ProWrestleLinks for his help with the design. And you can also watch, I may as well let you guys know now, there will be a brand new design, another one going up this week. The first Mama Monster shirt, probably tomorrow or Tuesday. A lot of you have asked for it. You got to get a Mama Monster shirt up. And I wanted to make sure she was okay with it, so it has her full approval. But yes, that will be going up in the next couple of days. And the timing is perfect. This is kind of what I was hinting at before, because it's been a challenging weekend, to say the least. We had a little setback. If you saw my tweet from yesterday, she's been in the hospital since early Friday morning. As a matter of fact, when I ended the show with Mish and Joey on Thursday, we probably ended like around 11:30 or so, maybe a little after. She was texting me. She was in so much pain. I had to drive her to the ER. We were there until about 5 in the morning. And I had to leave her because I had to go back home to catch a bus to go right to work. Because, of course, you know, naturally, that would be the day where there's almost nobody else in the office. Any other day, I'd probably just call in sick, but I couldn't do that. So, had to rush back home, just change, get right back on the bus. I'm, like, delirious at this point. It's just ridiculous. So, after I did Wrestling Soup, I literally did not get any sleep until, let's see. I mean, I finally got to sleep. I think it was about 10 o'clock on Friday night. So that was what, 36 hours straight, 40 hours, something like that. I mean, I used to do that in college and it sucked then. Trust me, it's even less fun when you get older. You do not want to pull all nighters like that. I was doing everything I could to just stay awake, driving back and forth. It's like a 25 minute drive back and forth to this hospital, and just trying to keep my eyes open. So In any event, I've been making hospital runs all weekend. That hand puppet photo that you saw on my Twitter, I saw that thing in the store for like $20 and I just had to buy it. You really do have to picture like Mankind putting Socko on his hand for Vince in the hospital. Somebody tweeted that to me. I'm like, you know what? That's kind of what it was. I'm just in the hospital room making an ass out of myself. Only I didn't bring Yerpel the clown with me. So anyway, I thought she might be getting checked out of the hospital today. It looks like they're going to keep her at least another day. But again, the shirt's going up this week, and she's been actually really excited about that. She's been more excited than I mean, I've gotten a bunch of shirts up before. She's like, oh, I'm going to get my own shirt. I go, yeah, don't worry. It's coming. So that's something to watch for in the next few days. And thank you also everybody who sent me messages trying to check in on her and well wishes and all that. She's doing much better. But again, it's probably going to be another day or two, and then hopefully she'll be able to break free and get the hell out of there. But yeah, it's been a stressful weekend. One weekend that hopefully will be stress-free, fingers crossed, is SummerSlam weekend. We are doing our meetup. In case you didn't hear the announcement at the end of the show last weekend, we are having another SummerSlam weekend meetup. This is not the day of SummerSlam. This is the day before SummerSlam. This is the day of NXT TakeOver at the Barclays Center. We will be back at the KBH, King's Beer Hall in Park Slope, Brooklyn, just a few blocks away from the arena. That's Saturday, August 19th at 2 p.m. Eastern. Please, if you have not already done so, check out the invite that is up on Facebook. I don't even think you need to have Facebook just to view the invite if you want to really see the information. But if you are on Facebook, please RSVP if you're going to be attending or you think you may be interested in attending, just so I can get a sense of headcount. That's up on Facebook. It's on the fan page. I'll probably tweet another link out to it. I hope to see a lot of you guys there. It's not a live show or anything like that. It's just a hangout, you know, for a few hours. And then anybody who's going to the NXT show can literally walk to the arena. It's very convenient. So that's on the 19th. And I think that does it for all the house cleaning. I did want to talk very briefly about Battleground, which was the worst pay-per-view of 2017 so far. Keyword there. Keywords so far. For those of you, by the way, who suggested Fastlane was a worse show than Battleground, I do think Battleground was worse. I actually had to go back and just kind of remind myself of what was on that Fastlane card. They both had bad main events, but the way I look at it, at least Goldberg, you know, finished off Owens in 21 seconds. You know, they didn't drag it out. They didn't go 30 minutes in the Punjabi prison like these guys did. I would rather have a bad main event that ends quickly, right, than one that dies a slow death and ends with a great Kali running. That's not my idea of fun. That's certainly not my idea of a pay-per-view main event. And I shouldn't even say run-in. It was more like a walk-in, right? Kali hasn't ran anywhere probably in 20 years. You know, he's so popular in India, people have said, oh, he should run for office. He can't run. He would walk for office. There's no running. There's no form of running that this guy could ever do. But to compare what you guys had to say about it, I posted on Twitter the side-by-side results for the Twitter polls that I did for both pay-per-views. And I can give you the results here. With 4,673 votes, Fastlane had 13% thumbs up, 87% thumbs down. Battleground had just a shade less, 4,667 votes, and it had 15% thumbs up, 85% thumbs down. So a remarkably consistent number of votes here in my Twitter poll between February and July here. And Fastlane does get the slight edge for worst show of the year in terms of the poll results. I still personally lean towards Battleground, but the scary thing is we have 5 months to go, right? I think SummerSlam will be okay. It's those end of the year shows I'm a little worried about. But if you want my full thoughts on the pay-per-view, they are up on YouTube. It was a really dull show, save for that tag team title match, which I thought was the one saving grace of the entire night. I thought that was a tremendous match. Unfortunately, it was all downhill after that. They opened with their best thing, and then from there, it was just progressively worse as the night went on. WWE put out a new fan council survey on Friday. You guys have heard about this fan council before. I will sometimes fill out these surveys that they send out periodically. And this was one of their most interesting surveys to date. This one asked fans, which non-WWE wrestlers are your favorites? And one can only speculate why they would want to know this. I'll leave that up to your imagination. But I want to read you the list of names that they included on here. Plenty of New Japan names on this list, including Okada, Tanahashi, Naito, Kenny Omega, The Young Bucks, Kushida, Jushin Thunder Liger. I'm shocked that Triple H never brought him back for another appearance in NXT after that match he had with Tyler Breeze. He was very well received. He had a fun match, and then he never came back after that. So he was on the list here. Marty Scurll, Will Ospreay, Zack Sabre Jr., who of course was part of the Cruiserweight Classic and I guess was not interested in signing a full-time deal with WWE. Interestingly enough, before I get into all the other names here, I just realized the one name not on this list that, you know, probably should be is Kota Ibushi. And it's not, I assume it's not because of lack of interest. I mean, God knows they tried to sign him. But yeah, I just realized he's not on this list. But let's see who else is on here. The Briscoes, Jay and Mark from Ring of Honor. EC3 and Bobby Lashley from GFW. Sienna, who I believe is the current Knockouts champion. I think I saw that mentioned somewhere. Angelina Love, Kenny King, War Machine, who I believe they're NXT bound anyway. At least that's the rumor. May take a few months, but I think they're on their way in. Also, lots of Lucha Underground names. Not just New Japan, but also Lucha Underground. Pentagon Dark was on the list. Phoenix, Mil Muertes, Oddly enough, Katrina was not listed here. Tejano, The Mac, Killshot, Son of Havoc, and Taya. No Johnny Mundo, which is also very odd. You know they would take him back in a heartbeat if you wanted back in. But he was not on the list. His fiance was, though. And there were a few other names. Those are the ones that really jumped out at me, though. You know, look, I've said recently, I just answered a mailbag question about this a few weeks ago. Okada should not be in WWE. Neither should Tanahashi. Neither should Naito. They're perfect where they are. I do think that Kenny Omega and the Young Bucks will end up in WWE or NXT. It's all the same. I do believe they will end up there. I think Omega will do very well there. Judging by WWE's tag team division of late, and a lot can change in a year, right? A year from now, maybe it'll look completely different. But I'm looking at this tag team division lately and the way they've gutted it. I don't know that I share that same level of enthusiasm for the Bucks as I do for Kenny Omega's chances. Now, if they were to bring in the Young Bucks, let's say that these were moves that were being made in the near term, like in the next few months, which it's not, but let's say it was. If they were to bring in the Bucks and the Briscoes, and let's say Red Dragon becomes a thing down in NXT, which it looks like they might. I think they should put them back together. You couple those teams with the Hardys, the New Day, the Usos, plus War Machine. I said War Machine is rumored to be headed in soon. Now you've got yourself a pretty exciting tag team division. It would not take a lot of effort if they really wanted to make that tag team division in this company must-see. Right now, it's just the shits. They're breaking up teams left and right, and the brand split and keeping these teams separate doesn't help. But if they really wanted to, and frankly, even if you kept the brand split, if you make a lot of the moves I just mentioned and you bring in a lot of that new blood, you can have, you know, it could be this new sort of renaissance for the tag team division. It would not be that difficult. Will they do that, though? That's the question. EC3, he was on this list. I think EC3 should be the face of Global Force Wrestling. I'm sorry, El Patron should not be the face of that company. EC3 should be. EC3 is maybe the greatest success story in that company that I could think of taking a guy who was with WWE, who they did nothing with, who had a lot of potential that just was not realized or recognized by that company. They took him, they gave him a shot, and they turned him into a star. Now, your definition of a star may be different. You may say, oh, EC3, yeah, he's a star for 250,000 people on Pop TV. Maybe so. But you know what? He worked his ass off, and he became a star. He carries himself like a star. He's one of the biggest names in that company. And I don't doubt that if he took that, maybe he couldn't call himself EC3, but if he basically took that persona over to NXT, if he brought that over to WWE, I think he would be a star on that roster too. And that's through all the work and all the fine tuning of his character and everything else for all those years in TNA. They deserve a lot of credit for that. I would want to flaunt that even more. He's the guy I would want to put on the posters and having my main events and stuff like that. Pentagon on the main roster? You guys know I'm a big Pentagon fan, but I don't think that would be such a good idea. Imagine Vince McMahon booking Pentagon Jr. Yeah, No thank you. And if John Morrison ever does want to go back to WWE, he should definitely have Taya with him. I don't think you bring one in. You could bring Morrison in without her, I guess. But I would bring both of them, and I like the idea of the two of them potentially coming in together at some point down the road. And Taya, I think, would be a hell of an addition to the women's division on either brand. You know, I did not know much about her before. I knew she was trained by Lance Storm, and I know she was doing her thing down in Mexico. But I wasn't really all that familiar with her before Lucha Underground. And having watched her, and she's wrestled women, she's wrestled men, she's pretty damn good. She's really good. So I think that she would be a benefit to the women's division on Raw or SmackDown, either way. So I would love to see both of them at some point make their way in if Morrison ever does want to come back. So anyway, that was the survey. It may end up meaning nothing, but usually these things mean something. They don't put these surveys out for no reason. So I thought the names they chose were very interesting. And I certainly think there's a lot of talented people on there who would do well in WWE. And there's a handful who I think should stay the hell away from WWE because they would just be completely destroyed. They may make more money, but there's just some people who are not made for WWE. There are some people who just will not do as well and will not flourish or will not be allowed to flourish there the way they do in other promotions. And you know, that's just my view on it. And I'm a fan of a lot of those people, but even I don't necessarily want to see all of them in WWE. So we'll see what happens, I guess, in the weeks to come. There's a lot of former Ring of Honor talent rumored to be on their way in. Donovan Dijak, Leo Rush, Adam Cole, I mentioned War Machine. There may be an influx of new talent coming in very soon, and we'll see if they add anybody else to that. Now, there's also been a lot of rumors. This is a big story this week that there could be another superstar shakeup on the way. We had the first shakeup back in April. Things didn't shake out too well for the SmackDown brand. I think we can all agree. I think Raw got the better end of that. Not to say that SmackDown doesn't have a lot of talent, but that show, for the most part, the last couple of months has been missing something. That show has not been what it once was. And so I don't know if this is a sort of correct things, or if this is just going to be the new norm where they have a couple of shakeups, one in the spring and one in the fall going forward. I don't know. But that is the rumor, that there may be one post-SummerSlam. Now, post-SummerSlam doesn't mean the week after SummerSlam. I'm hearing the fall. That could be September. That could be October. It may not happen at all. Right now, it is just a rumor. WWE has said nothing about it. But I was giving, and also one of the interesting aspects that's being rumored, that's being discussed about this shakeup, is that there could be moves involving NXT, and not necessarily NXT people coming up, although that may happen, but taking main roster talents who are just not doing anything or are not having the same level of success on the main roster as they did in NXT and moving them down to NXT. That's also being talked about. So I was giving this some thought just off the cuff. I mean, I didn't sit here for an hour mapping out moves. I'm just thinking, okay, what moves would I want to make? You know, and the first thing I was thinking is if John Cena can be a free agent, then you know what? Brock Lesnar should be one too. Because Brock Lesnar, much like Cena, even more so than Cena, Brock Lesnar is a special attraction at this point. He very rarely makes appearances. I don't think he should be limited, frankly, to one roster over the other. I think whatever matches he has left, whether he sticks around or he doesn't sign a new contract or what have you, you know, he's only got like a finite number of opponents that I think you could put him in there with, people that he hasn't wrestled before. I would not limit that. I would not limit him to one roster over the other. As much as I would like to see him in there with guys like Joe and Strowman, I do want to see those matches. I think he should be able to wrestle guys like AJ Styles. I think he should be able to get in there with somebody like Shinsuke Nakamura, who he wrestled about 10 or 11 years ago in Japan. It'd be interesting to see the two of them all these years later have a match. So I think that giving Brock Lesnar the free agent treatment, and you could very easily explain it. You could have Paul Heyman show up one day and say, you know, you could even pretend that Brock's contract is up, even though it's really not. You can have Heyman show up and say, hey, if John Cena can have that treatment, why can't my client? You could very easily explain that away. I would make that move. I would move Samoa Joe over to SmackDown. Now, I mean, if this shakeup is still a few months away and they're not going to put the belt on him at SummerSlam, which I would do, I think Joe to SmackDown would be a fine move. He's got a lot of fresh talents over there that he could work with, including AJ Styles and Randy Orton and others, Nakamura. I would probably move Kevin Owens back to Raw. I think it's time to have him and Sammy on separate brands. I just think, you know, Owens, you know, he's been feuding with AJ Styles. We've seen him in there with John Cena. We've seen him in there with a bunch of people, including Sammy, on that SmackDown roster. Depending on how the rest of the shakeup goes, I think moving him back to Raw could actually end up giving us some more fresh opponents for him. Maybe not the Shield guys, because we've seen him in there with Dean Ambrose 1,000 times. But I would consider moving Owens back to Raw. I would move Bobby Roode to the main roster. I mean, if he drops that championship to Drew McIntyre at TakeOver in a few weeks, I think one of the reasons that may happen is to make way for him coming to the main roster. If so, I think I'd put him on the Raw brand. Hideo Itami, what more is there left for him to do in NXT at this point? I think he's long overdue for a main roster call-up. I would move Itami to SmackDown. I think that NXT can afford to lose a couple of guys like Roode and Itami because I'm sure Adam Cole is on his way in soon. There's always new talent coming in that they can plug into these prime spots in NXT. And like I said, Itami has done all he can do. When this feud is over with him and Cassius Ohno, you know, I mean, what is left for him to do? I guess as a heel, he can go after the championship. Let's say if McIntyre wins, you could do McIntyre and Itami. That's not really a feud that excites me, but I guess you can do that. But I think it's time. I think it's with this guy, it's time to shit or get off the pot. You bring him up to the main roster or he's never going to make it up. And so I'd send Rude to Raw. I'd send Itami to SmackDown. Apollo Crews. Apollo Crews is a guy who he's been doing the Titus brand stuff. Even with Titus, it's obvious this guy's going nowhere in the position he's in on Raw. And, you know, as long as somebody like Brock is the Universal Champion, believe me, Apollo Crews ain't getting a title shot either. So what are you really, you know, what are you really grooming him for? I'd move Apollo Crews back to SmackDown. I would move Big Cass over to SmackDown. Keep Enzo on Raw. I would move Cass over to SmackDown. Pair him up with Carmella. I've pitched that before. I like the idea of the two of them together. Asuka. Asuka's another name. I've thought about this a lot. What do you do with Asuka? Do you keep her in NXT until WrestleMania, like WrestleMania weekend next year? She can't stay down there forever. You know, as much as I'd like to see her on SmackDown, you know, putting all the Japanese talent on SmackDown, I don't want to do that either. Because, you know, you have Nakamura on SmackDown. I pitched Itami to SmackDown. I would take Asuka. I would put Asuka on Raw. There's going to be time for her to have her match with Charlotte and all that. You could do maybe like a Raw versus SmackDown match at WrestleMania next year if you want with her and Charlotte because they're on separate brands. I would move Asuka to Raw even if she retains her championship at TakeOver. Even if she still has the NXT Women's title, I would move her up, right? Because, you know, that's her gimmick. That's her gimmick. There's no competition for me in NXT. I'm not going to show up on TV until I get competition. So, you know, she's going to have the match with Ember Moon at TakeOver. I'm not going to make an early prediction because I don't know which way they're going to go with that yet. But let's say she gets drafted to Raw, still undefeated. She still has yet to be beaten. And you could either have her give up the championship or she can still be the champion. She could still make appearances, you know, periodically in NXT to defend her title while also being a main roster star on Raw. We've seen people do that before. Kevin Owens. Kevin Owens came up to the main roster for 2 months. Kevin Owens was on the main roster while still the NXT champion before he dropped it to Finn Balor. So, you know, they've done that before. They could do it with Asuka. You know, keep her unbeaten and just move her up to Raw. You know, I mean, I've for a while now, I've been in favor of having Hojo, Kairi Hojo, or Kairi Sane, I guess her name is now in NXT, win the Mae Young Classic and be the one to dethrone Asuka. You can still do that even if you move Asuka up to the main roster. I'm not giving up on that idea, but this is a shakeup, right? And we've talked about the fact that Raw has been shit for so long, and now SmackDown has kind of been falling. Although I think both shows, you know, and the Twitter polls had positive ratings for both shows this week. I think the last couple of weeks have been better. But yeah, for the longest time, Raw has been a slog to sit through and watch. So if they're going to have a shakeup, you know, I'm as terrified as a lot of you are to move some of these people over to Raw. It just feels like whatever Raw touches turns to shit. It's like the opposite. They have the opposite of the Midas touch with a lot of these people. But if you're going to have a shakeup, then shake things up. Shake them the hell up. And one of the ways to do that, you got to move some big names around. Asuka's a big name. She's got to go up to the main roster at some point. Put her on Raw. Let her stay undefeated if you want. Let her go back and forth. She could be the only one doing it. It'll make her feel special. Right off the bat, she'll come in, she'll feel like a big deal. That's what I would do. As far as some other moves, Emma, they're not doing jack shit with Emma. I would move Emma back to NXT. If they're considering moving people back down there, Emma is a prime person for that role to go back down to NXT, and maybe down there they can appreciate her for the talent that we know that she has. She's a good wrestler. We don't really have a chance to see that on the main roster. We certainly didn't have a chance to see that on Monday night. Move her ass back down to NXT. Dana Brooke. I would move Dana Brooke back down to NXT for entirely different reasons because Dana Brooke has no business being on the main roster. She never should have been moved out of NXT. Maybe by now she would actually be a pretty good wrestler. But she's got a ways to go. I would move her back down to NXT for her own sake. Now, I mentioned Emma and Dana Brooke back down to NXT. What I would do to kind of fill the two spots on Raw that now have been left vacant in that women's division is I would move up Billie Kay and Peyton Royce. Bring them up as a package deal to replace Emma and Dana Brooke. So that makes up for them losing two women. And it gets them the hell off NXT because they haven't been doing much anyway. Where have they been? And also, because WWE, let's be honest, is probably going to end up signing a good portion of those 32 women that they've got in this Mae Young Classic. I mean, they may not sign all 32, but probably the majority of them are going to end up getting a contract. I doubt that Billie Kay and Peyton Royce are going to be doing much down there in the near future anyway with all this new talent coming in. So I would move them up to Raw. One more move. I just kind of randomly was thinking about this. I was thinking about the Cruiserweight division. And I know I didn't get into what I would do with, you know, tag teams and the Cruiserweights, but I'm just thinking of kind of singular moves right now. There's one guy in the... There's a lot of talented guys in the Cruiserweight division, don't get me wrong, Neville being chief among them, but there's one guy who stands out to me who I thought, before he kind of got mired and stuck in the Cruiserweight division, had the potential to be a real star, right? Even though he may be 205 or 200 pounds or whatever he is, and that's Cedric Alexander. And it's obvious to me that as long as Cedric Alexander is stuck in that Cruiserweight division, he ain't getting out. There's only so much you can do with the guy. What I would consider doing is moving Cedric down to NXT. He wasn't in NXT for very long. He had a couple of matches there, but he pretty much went from the Cruiserweight Classic up to Raw. I would move him down to NXT, and I think on the NXT roster, Cedric Alexander could really become one of the top stars on that brand. I really do. And then maybe 6 months or a year from now, you move him back up and he could be something. But, you know, my fear is that as long as he's stuck in Cruiserweight hell, he ain't going anywhere. So move him down to NXT. So those are some of the moves that I came up with when I was thinking about it the other day. I'm sure you guys have a million and one moves that you would make. If this ends up on tracks, I'd love to see the comments down below, or you guys could email me, let me know what you would do. Again, there's a million moves that we could probably make that would help improve these shows. I can only hope that you know, the people actually running the show, if they're going to do another one of these shakeups, they don't half-ass it. It's called shake-up for a reason, right? And God knows these two shows can use one, so shake it up. Shake them up and make them better. One more note before I get into Raw. WWE released its second quarter earnings this week. Record $214 million in revenue for the quarter, by the way, so good for them. CBS Sports ran a story with the headline Raw and SmackDown to eventually become online only. WWE feels that at some point, as things evolve, they could very well see themselves going to a digital partner the way that they do now with a broadcast partner like USA. Somehow this has turned into stories in some places that Raw and SmackDown are coming to the network soon, or they're going online only soon, which is not true. In fact, and I think that this is important to keep in mind if we want some perspective on this, this past quarter alone, WWE took in $60 million in income from their TV deal. Now, you compare that to $14 million from the WWE Network, and this is key, less than $1 million from YouTube and social media. So for all this talk about how many hits they get on YouTube, and you know, we're still many, many years away from any of this happening. It is true that you have Amazon and you have Facebook getting into original programming. Facebook's been talked about as a potential WWE partner for their shows at some point. They already have a great relationship. But until the day comes that Facebook is willing to shell out a couple of $100 million for the rights to WWE programming, it's not happening. It ain't happening. But keep that in mind. Less than $1 million derived from the 17 million or so subscribers that they have on YouTube. And even if they did move Raw and SmackDown over there, I'm not convinced those numbers would increase as much as people think. Some people may say, well, if you just took Raw and SmackDown off TV, people would have to go find it, and all those millions would flock to Facebook, or they would flock to wherever WWE goes. Yes, some of them would, but I'm not convinced that all of them would. I mean, when WWE moved from USA Network to TNN, which later became Spike, now, I think Spike may have been available in fewer homes in USA, but they were pretty comparable. I don't think it was that much of a drop-off. And as the years went on, they were pretty much on the same level. It was 90-some-odd million homes, I think, that both channels were available in. But they lost audience. When they moved from USA to Spike, the only thing that changed was the network. And they lost audience. So, I mean, and that's just one example, but you can't just assume that if, you know, WWE, if people are so loyal, that if they move, everybody will follow. Yes, a large number of people will follow, but not everybody will. You know, you can't assume that. So the point of this is that we're still way off from any of this becoming a reality. I think some of these headlines have been a little misleading. But I do agree that, you know, 5 years down the road, 10 years down the road, whatever it is, TV as we know it will basically go, you know, the way of the T-Rex and the woolly mammoth, and everything will go digital at some point. It's inevitable that that is what will happen. Monday Night Raw was live from Washington, D.C. this past week. The Twitter poll had over 2,300 votes, 61% thumbs up, 39% thumbs down. We've got our fatal four-way for SummerSlam. It's going to be Brock Lesnar defending the Universal Championship against Roman Reigns, Braun Strowman, and Samoa Joe. Hottest segment of the show was the opener. So this Raw had something in common with Battleground. Had three of the four guys in the ring. You can take a guess which three of the four. Guess who wasn't there. But three of the four guys were in the ring with Kurt Angle. It broke down into a fight. Angle was calling security down to the ring to help break it up. And Braun Strowman absolutely laid waste to these poor bastards. He threw one guy over the top rope. He nearly killed himself on the way down to the floor. Then he grabbed another guy. He literally launched him like a rocket over the ropes. He cleared the ropes. I thought there were other security guys on the outside to catch him, but nope. There was nobody there to break his fall except the ground. You would think he was out there wrestling The Miz. Nobody caught him. He crash-landed right on his hip. Then they sent all the mid-card guys down to break it up. Gold Dust, the Entourage, the Club, Heath Slater. Roman Reigns started beating them up. And Strowman ended up flattening Reigns with the running power slam. So it was a hot segment. And I would love to get a welfare check on that poor guy he threw out of the ring. Hopefully he got an extra stipend for his work that night. I would not mind Joe or Strowman getting the championship at SummerSlam. I hope one of them does get the championship, preferably Joe, if I had a choice. I think Strowman will get it in due time, but I think Joe just has... And Strowman has momentum too, so I guess you can make the argument for both. But me personally, I'd put it on Joe. But somebody emailed me a few days ago asking about a Shield reunion, which they've obviously been teasing lately with Rollins and Ambrose. They ended the show. You know, they won a big match against Miz and the Entourage, and you know, Rollins went out for the fist bump, and he did not get a fist bump from Ambrose in return. So they're doing the slow burn here with these guys. But somebody emailed me and was asking about, you know, the Shield reunion, and you know, what if they did one with Roman to end SummerSlam, and maybe they help Reigns win the title. The only way that works is, I think, if they're a heel unit again, because you try to do... I just feel like it's going to... If you just keep Roman as Roman and you don't change anything, it may actually hurt the Shield reunion more than it sort of helps Roman Reigns, if that's one of the goals with reuniting these guys. I think initially people would be really excited to see the three of them doing the fist bump and get a big pop. But again, I almost feel like if you don't make any sort of changes with Roman and keep him as is, he may drag that whole thing down more than it's going to help him. So to me, you know, if they're a heel unit, well, I guess the problem with that though is, there's two problems with that. One, that means you're turning three of your biggest babyfaces heel in one night if you do that. And I know most of you don't consider Roman to be a babyface because he gets booed every week and you don't like him. But he is a babyface. I'm sorry. He is. If they turn all at once, you know, what does that leave you with? That leaves you with Brock, who's never around and maybe going to UFC anyway. Strowman, who absolutely could be a babyface ass kicker. Joe, who also could be a babyface ass kicker if they need him to be. Who else? Who else? I mean, Finn Balor. Okay, you got Finn Balor. I was going to say Jason Jordan, but he's not even remotely ready for that spot. I just don't think it works. I think if you do make them a heel unit and turn all those guys, I just don't think it works. You could shift John Cena over to Raw since he's now a free agent, and he and Roman have been talking smack on Twitter to each other lately. But they're not doing Cena versus Reigns after SummerSlam. They would do that at, you know, WrestleMania. I think the scenario that makes more sense, which is not a language these people are fluent in, I get that, would be to do a Shield reunion, but then, whether it's the same night or the next night or a week later or whatever, but you do the reunion, you get the big pop, you get the big visual with the fist bump and everything, but then have Ambrose beat the crap out of Rollins the way that Rollins did to him when he first broke the Shield up. That turns Ambrose, you would hope, you never know how these crowds are going to react. The fans may actually be in his corner and agree and be like, yeah, you know, we're behind Ambrose doing to Rollins what Rollins did to him. But in theory, it would turn Ambrose, again, even though he would be totally justified in doing this. But I do think the fans would be pissed at him for ruining, you know, the reunion. And God knows that I think somebody like Ambrose could really use a good heel run. He just needs a change. He needs to get the hell away from The Miz, and he just needs a change. And I think that would be a good change for him. So in the end, you know, Roman is Roman. Seth is one of the biggest baby faces on the show. But Ambrose turns. I think that would be interesting. It would make Ambrose more interesting to me. Because I have to say, he's probably the least interesting of the bunch. At least Roman, with the reactions he gets and everything, you can at least make the argument that he's kind of interesting. Rollins... Look, Rollins does not have the fire and the momentum I think that he did a year or two ago. I think, you know, ever since he came back, there's been something missing there. But, you know, he's doing well enough for himself right now. And then there's Ambrose. And Ambrose, look, he goes out there, he busts his ass. And I think he wrestled more matches than anybody last year. He was the Iron Man in that company, and he works hard. But that whole character and the personality and everything, he just needs an overhaul. And I've thought for a while now that he's been miscast as a babyface. Question is, if he ever really does go heel, would they let Ambrose be Ambrose? I mean, I'm not saying bring back CZW, you know, John Moxley or any of that, but you know that there's a great heel buried in that guy just waiting to come out. And we really have not had a chance to see it. Does he have it in him? And do they let some of that shine through? Because if they do, I think you'd have a hell of a heel on your hands. I really do. Speaking of Strowman, this is a wild story from this week's Observer. And honestly, it is so ridiculous. After reading it, I immediately dismissed it as BS. I said, well, somebody obviously fed misinformation to Dave here because there's no way this happened. But it has since been confirmed by another source that has broken some stories in the past themselves. So I feel like I should at least mention it, even though I'm sure there will still be people skeptical. But again, there's now multiple sources who are reporting this. So apparently, a few weeks ago when Raw was in Nashville, this was the same night that Kurt Angle revealed his new son to the world. People were worried, oh my God, they're in Nashville. Dixie's going to come out. And thankfully, she didn't. But that night, a bunch of WWE people and GFW people ended up at the same bar after the show. Karen Jarrett was there, as was Braun Strowman. As the story goes, Karen went up to Strowman to tell him that he was one of her son's favorite wrestlers and asked him for an autograph. Braun, apparently not knowing who she was, said something very nasty to her. Meltzer would not say what it was, but Voices of Wrestling has confirmed the story as well on their Twitter page, and they say, they claim, the phrase that Strowman used, and I quote, was, fuck your son. Now, why he would be so mean to little Jason Jordan, I have no idea. They were in a bar, perhaps he was drunk. In any event, there were multiple witnesses, multiple wrestlers who witnessed what happened, and what happened next. And this is the part that just seems so over the top to me when I first read this. I didn't believe it, but again, I guess there's multiple accounts of it from WWE and GFW people who were there. This set Karen off, no surprise, obviously. I mean, any mother probably in that situation would be pissed off about that. And she basically cut a promo right there in the bar on Strowman, started screaming at him, telling him, I'm going to tell his father about this, and his dad is Kurt Angle. And all of a sudden, Braun Strowman realized he fucked up badly. He realized who she was. He realized the mistake he had made. He told her, oh, I'll sign the autograph. And he basically begged her not to tell Kurt. He said he would even get down on his knees and beg her not to tell Kurt. Now, I'm trying to visualize this, and this is, it's just, it's just so incredible. either Kurt Angle is like the biggest badass in the world and scares everyone, or Strowman was just worried about losing his job. Maybe a little bit of both. I don't know. She said, "No, I'm still telling Kurt." He then proceeded to, in fact, get down on his knees in front of a bunch of WWE guys and begged her not to say anything. And she said, "Well, you're only doing that because you didn't know that Kurt was his father, and you had no right to act like that, even if I was just a fan coming up to you." And he agreed with her, and he kept apologizing and saying, "I'm so sorry." Voices of Wrestling said the story is true. They back up what Meltzer reported, but they claim that one of their sources say Braun didn't so much get down on his knees as well as he kneeled down, which is basically the same thing. Either way, that's embarrassing as all hell. You know, now imagine if Braun was Rebby Sky, and instead of saying, "Fuck your son," she told Karen, you know, "Fuck that owl." Imagine the two of them together in the same bar. Holy shit. I would pay a cover charge at the door? I'd pay $50 cover to get into the bar to see the two of them. But man, talk about a wild story. And if it is true, I'm sure that's something Braun will probably not live down in that locker room for some time. I'm just the image of that, the image of him kneeling down or getting down on his knees and begging Jeff Jarrett's wife not to tell Kurt Angle. The whole thing is just insane. It is insane. All the more reason why they should put the championship on Joe at SummerSlam and not this guy. Nah, I'm kidding. Elias Samson, who now is listed only as Elias on his WWE.com profile. We'll see on TV this week if this is another case of Vince McMahon turning someone's first name into an orphan by murdering the last name. He had his best TV match to date against Finn Balor. This was no DQ. This was after Samson had pasted him with that guitar shot and busted him open the week before. Balor did the double foot stomp, had the match won, but the lights went out. When they came back on, Bray Wyatt was in the ring, laid him out with Sister Abigail, and Samson crawled over and covered Balor for the win. So it looks like Balor and Wyatt is official. Well, it's not official, but it will be for SummerSlam. I suspect that we will see the Demon in that match for the first time since he came back from the injury. It would seem like an appropriate place to bring back the Demon back, you know, at SummerSlam. It's a big show. I really hope when he brings the Demon stuff back that there's something there to differentiate it from his normal persona. Some new move, or even just, you know, being extra aggressive. Otherwise, it's just, you know, body paint and a Bob Marley wig. I mean, there's really nothing different about him when he's the Demon. Big Cass squashed Enzo Amore again. Wham, bam, thank you, ma'am. I really don't give a damn. Time to move on with this. I mean, look, we all knew Enzo was doomed in this feud. But this is just ridiculous at this point. Big Show came out when Cass was continuing his assault when the match was over. He tells Big Show he's got Enzo, right? He's got him by the neck. And he says to Big Show, "Don't you dare come any closer or I'm going to break Enzo's neck." So what does Big Show do? He calls his bluff. He comes into the ring anyway. So that shows how badly he cares about Enzo Amore. Cass threw Enzo into Big Show. He beat the Big Show up. He left him laying. Michael Cole made a comment here. He said, "It might be time for Enzo to move on." You don't say. You don't say. Emma continues to waste away on this show. She confronted Kurt Angle in the back. She said, "What am I going to have to do to get noticed around here?" She said, "You know what? Maybe I'll have to start dating your son, Jason Jordan." Kurt put her in a match with Nia Jax. Nia Jax proceeded to destroy Emma. She was squashed in seconds. I said it earlier, if anybody from the main roster gets drafted down to NXT in another shakeup, Emma needs to be on that list. Absolutely, 100%, must go back to NXT because she is doing nothing on this Raw roster, and it's obvious that she won't be. This is not just a case of like Mickie James. With Mickie James, I just feel like, you know what? It's not your time. We don't have anything for you right now. She's another one. Big name. Hasn't really been getting great reactions since she came back, but she's a big name, right? From a bygone era. Great wrestler. Not doing anything with her. But not everybody could get, you know, a big push all at the same time. I get that. But with Emma, it's been the start and stop shit. She got hurt. She came back. She was on TV a few times. Then she vanished. She's sitting in the back. She's frustrated. This is a case where the best thing for her, I think, would be to put her back on that NXT show. Mickie James, I assume at some point her time will come. And they'll do something with her and Sasha. Maybe they'll do something with her and Bayley. You know, but right now it's not her time. With Emma, it's not going to be. I'm not convinced that it will ever be her time. So the best thing to do is to move her back to NXT. Jason Jordan. Jason Jordan wrestled his first match as Kurt Angle's son here on the show against Kurt Hawkins. But first, he had an awful interview with Renee Young in the back. Not awful in that he botched something or stumbled over his words or anything like that, but he did this interview with Renee Young in the back. It wasn't like a sit-down or anything. It was just a regular, you know, stand-up interview. All of this forced, corny dialogue about how shocked he was to learn his childhood hero was actually his dad. You could practically see the word bubble above his head as he spoke the words. Crowd wasn't very forgiving during this either. You could hear how restless they were getting, catcalling and everything. If they give this guy more of what we saw here, I guarantee you right now, this will fail. This will die a miserable death. Guaranteed failure. Instead, what they should be doing more of is what came next. He had a match with Kurt Hawkins. He dominated him. I think Hawkins smacked him in the face. That woke him up. He went nuts. He pulled down the straps. He was suplexing him all over the place. People were reacting to the suplexes like they used to back in NXT. They were reacting to the suplexes. If he does more of that, he will have the best chance of getting over. I can't say that he will, but he'll have a chance. The promo was horrendous. The match was a good first showing, I thought, even if the crowd was dead for most of it. They did react, again, to some of the big suplex spots. This guy's not going to get over on promos. He's going to get over doing his thing in the ring. That's just a fact. That's it. You know, he, when him and Gable were together, they played off each other very well. But Gable is the one that really has the personality and the sense of humor. Jordan, you know, what you got to do with him is just show him off in the ring. Showcase what he has in the ring and keep the talking to a minimum. Especially all this corny, just BS forced nonsense that nobody even believes. Keep that to a minimum. Let him go out there and kick ass. That's it. This is not hard. I'm not sitting here and telling you that, I could book a 3-hour show very easily. I understand it's hard to book a 3-hour show. You got a lot of time to fill. You got 20, 30 people you got to write for. I would never sit here and say that it's easy. But I'm looking at this guy who they clearly want to push. They want him to be successful. They want him to become a big star. You don't link this guy with Kurt Angle unless you have big plans for someone. But you put him out there for more promos like this and you're going to sabotage yourself. Don't do that. There was a really good match on this show between Sasha Banks and Bayley. Wanted to mention that here as well. They even had Let's Go Sasha, Let's Go Bayley dueling chants, just like they did in Brooklyn a few years ago. My one criticism of this, and again, I could sit here and say, why did they just give this match away with no build on this show? This should be the women's match at SummerSlam, which is true. But my one criticism is the frog splash by Sasha, who I know is a huge Eddie Guerrero mark. That frog splash, though, yeesh. I don't even know if I could call it a frog splash. They used to call it the tadpole splash when Hornswoggle would do it. That's what it was. It was a tadpole. Sasha Banks did a tadpole splash on Raw. She got to work on that. She got a near fall with it, but then Bayley immediately reversed it and got the flash pin. Sasha could not believe it. I could not believe it that they just beat her like that. Because this was for the number one contendership at SummerSlam. This was a match to determine who would challenge Alexa Bliss for the championship in Brooklyn. I thought for sure we were going to get some kind of a disputed finish or something. They gave us a clean finish. Bayley is in. Sasha's out. Now, it sure looks like we may finally be headed for that Sasha Banks heel turn on Bayley. Just, you know, she can't be happy with what happened here. And they've been dropping little hints lately, so maybe it happens at SummerSlam. Maybe she cost Bayley the match. Maybe it happens on Raw the night after. They're in the same building in Brooklyn. But it's coming. I think that seems pretty obvious to me that it's coming soon. I was stunned, though, that we got a clean finish. And for now, Sasha is not on the SummerSlam card. Now, we've got, 3 weeks, I think? 2.5 weeks, something like that. Plenty of time to get her on there in some other match. But right now, she is not on the SummerSlam card. And I have to think there's also a chance that she still may be added to this match. I think this match still may end up as a triple threat. We know they love their multi-person matches. Four ways and five ways and three ways and eight ways. So it is not impossible to think that Sasha could still worm her way into this match. Alexa got into the ring when it was over, post-match, and Sasha had disappeared. I don't know where she went. She was gone. The problem is that when Bayley and Alexa first feuded earlier this year, Bayley was actually more over then than she is now, which I think is just an indictment on WWE and the creative powers that be more than anything else. It's hard to fuck up a character like Bayley, but they managed to do it somehow, and she was getting boos a few months ago. It was awful. You know, they're supposed to be helping people become more popular, not less popular. But this was a pay-per-view caliber match here on this show with Sasha and Alexa, or Sasha and Bayley, I should say. The other thing that makes me think that Sasha may be added to this, and this, again, I can't stress this enough. I said this to someone on Twitter a few days ago. And if she doesn't get added, it's actually ass backwards. The first Sasha-Alexa match, or at least the match they had at Great Balls of Fire earlier this month, this was only a few weeks ago. It feels like a lifetime ago now, but this was only about 3 weeks ago. If you remember, that match ended with Alexa getting herself counted out and running away from Sasha. Sasha got the win. And they never followed up on that. Sasha won, Alexa ran away, and now it's Bayley getting the championship match at SummerSlam. The same Bayley who was beaten decisively by the champion. So here I was after the last pay-per-view thinking that, well, maybe they did this crappy count-out finish because it's going to set up a no DQ, no count-out match at SummerSlam. Or I even floated the idea, I think I did in my Great Balls of Fire review, I floated the idea of doing a false count anywhere match for the women's championship with Sasha and Alexa. Tell me you would not rather see my idea of Sasha and Alexa, which seemed like a really hot feud not that long ago, of doing that match as a false count anywhere stip for the title at SummerSlam. Tell me you wouldn't want to see that rather than just another Bayley-Alexa match. But the one saving grace is perhaps they're doing this on purpose. Maybe that'll be part of what Sasha complains about when she goes heel. Why did Bayley get the shot and not me? Blah, blah, blah. We'll see. I mean, again, maybe I'm giving them too much credit because they probably won't bother explaining it at all. But at least if this ends up setting up the Sasha turn, at least we'll get something out of this. But as it stands, this whole thing is just completely ass backwards. So the Raw side of the SummerSlam card seems to be filling out. We've got the main event now. We have what may be a tag team championship match with Sheamus and Cesaro against Seth Rollins and Dean Ambrose. They could do Rollins against Ambrose. That's always possible if things break down between them in the next few weeks. I haven't heard too many people suggesting that. Everybody seems to think it's going to be a tag team title match, and it probably will. But I would not count out the idea of doing Rollins against Ambrose. We have Bayley and Alexa for the women's title. Sasha maybe gets added to make it a three-way. I do find it hard to believe they would leave her off the card completely. Finn Balor against Bray Wyatt. Big Cass against The Big Show. You know, I can't say I'm overly impressed, at least by the Raw side of the card, other than the main event. That main event's going to be a lot of fun. And again, anybody can win. That's what I like about it. Any one of those four guys reasonably can win. It is not a foregone conclusion that Brock will retain. It is not a foregone conclusion that the big dog, woof woof, is going to win. And then you got Joe and Strowman. Each one of them, either one of them, could get the championship. And I don't think anybody would be terribly disappointed if either one of them walked out of Brooklyn with the belt. That, to me, is what makes that match so intriguing. Plus, I just think it's going to be an awesome match. SmackDown Live from Richmond, Virginia. Twitter poll, about 2,000 votes. 81% thumbs up, 19% thumbs down. Call it a SmackDown rebound. Those numbers are way, way up from what they've been over the last few weeks. Chris Jericho's back. He was only gone for 2 months this time around. He grew his hair out a little bit. He's also got a snazzy new light bright scarf. Not going to lie, I would totally wear one of those if they sold. The problem is if they sold them, they'd probably sell it for like $500 because of the lights. Either that or I'd get caught in a rainstorm. But what a way to go. So they set up Jericho, Owens, and Styles in a triple threat main event on the show for the United States Championship, which AJ Styles won clean by pinning Chris Jericho. So AJ is once again the United States Champion after having lost the belt back to Kevin Owens at Battleground. And, you know, based on what they did here on this show with the title, it sure does look like the finish of that Styles-Owens match at the pay-per-view was either botched or it was changed mid-match. I've read both versions of what may have happened. Something happened with the finish of that match. That was not the original planned finish. Either way, again, the belief is that AJ was supposed to retain the championship. The fact they got the thing off Owens and right back on Styles doesn't prove anything, but that does seem to back that up. It really was just a weird finish on the pay-per-view. And there was no real follow-up to it on SmackDown. You thought they'd be showing replays, it was going to be this big controversy, but nope, nothing. But this was a really good match. Owens hit a frog splash on Jericho. AJ then grabbed Owens, threw him out of the ring. And how many times have we seen Kevin Owens do this? AJ gave him a taste of his own medicine, where Owens hit a big move and had the match won, but AJ threw him out of the ring, and AJ stole the pin and won the title. And Owens had this great look on his face. His mouth was just agape. He could not believe what just happened. He invoked his rematch clause immediately for the show coming up this week. So here's hoping they blow this thing off and they just move both guys into different programs for SummerSlam. I think the whole AJ Owens thing has run its course. You know, it's hard for me to sit here and say they had bad matches. I don't think they had bad matches. I just think I expected more, and none of their matches really blew me away. I don't know if it's a chemistry issue or not, but I was a little underwhelmed by the matches they've had so far, and I'd rather they just go their separate ways and move on to different opponents for SummerSlam. Now, for Owens, that may be Shane McMahon as a possible SummerSlam opponent based on the interaction the two of them had here on this show in one of the backstage segments. They once teased this match on Raw. It was a very subtle tease, but if you think back to last year, I don't know which episode of Raw it was, so don't ask me. But I remember there was a very subtle tease or an interaction of some kind between Shane, this was not long after he came back to the company, and Kevin Owens on Raw. And at the time, and I probably talked about this here on the show, I said that I would love to see that match because I just feel like if they made it no DQ, that's the key. If it was a street fight, think street fight in the way that Kurt Angle had a street fight with Shane back at the King of the Ring. In a no DQ type of match, I think those two could have a really fun brawl. And I have nothing to base this on. I have no idea what their chemistry would be like. And Shane, we've seen Shane in matches where he blows up 2 minutes in. But I just feel like they could have a really fun brawl. I still feel that way. So if they want to make that match for SummerSlam, I'll tell you what, I don't mind it. I would not mind it. And any Shane match we know is going to get a good amount of hype because it's Shane. So, of course, it's going to be one of the top featured matches on the show. It would be a pretty good spot for Kevin Owens to be in. If you don't want to do the Shane match, you could do Kevin Owens and Chris Jericho. Now that Jericho is back, I assume at least through SummerSlam. I don't think he came back this week only to miss out on the SummerSlam card. And they were friends for how many months, right? They had that long rivalry, and then Owens, you know, put him out of action for a couple of months, and they have unresolved issues. You can very easily do a Kevin Owens-Chris Jericho match at SummerSlam. So that's two potential opponents not named AJ Styles for Kevin Owens. Now, as far as Styles, they've already teased John Cena accepting the open challenge for the U.S. title. They almost gave us the match a few weeks ago. that seems to be a thing now on SmackDown where they're just giving away big matches on TV with no build. But look, I'm sure that if you did Styles and Cena again at SummerSlam, which is what they did last year, arguably match of the year. Some people say match of the year candidate, whatever. They had a great match. And it was refreshing to see Styles get a clean pinfall win over John Cena. That doesn't happen as often as you would think. So I don't doubt they would go out there and tear the house down and maybe have the best match on the show. But do we really need to see that match again? You know, and now AJ, it would be babyface against babyface, now babyface against heel. Also, do you really think that we would be getting the same outcome if they do the same exact match 1 year later? I don't think so. And I have no interest in seeing John Cena win back the U.S. title. So I'll pass on that. Styles was, you know what? Styles was talking up Chad Gable like he was something special after that first match they had on TV. And it was only like an 8 or 9 minute match they had a few weeks ago, but it was really good. And there was an interview on WWE.com from backstage at Madison Square Garden the night that AJ won the belt at that house show. And he brought up Chad Gable, or maybe the person interviewing him brought up Chad Gable. But there he was, talking about Gable, and it was already like a couple of weeks after the match they had, and I'm like, huh, he's still talking this guy up, huh? So I'm thinking to myself, yeah, I like Chad Gable. I'm a Chad Gable fan. Why not Gable? Why not have Gable? If they're going to keep this open challenge thing going, why not have him accept in advance and challenge AJ for the championship at SummerSlam? You know, we got Jason Jordan getting a big push on Raw. Gable ought to get the same treatment on SmackDown. He's every bit as good. It shouldn't be, you know, Nakamura. That's got to be the WrestleMania match. They'd be freaking out of their minds to do that match at Summer. To have Nakamura just come out and accept the U.S. title, you know, the open challenge. You can't do that match at SummerSlam. It's too soon. If they blow off Nakamura John Cena and Nakamura AJ Styles in the same month, they're out of their minds. Absolutely out of their minds. And I don't think they will. So I don't think it's going to be Nakamura. I would even accept Randy Orton in that spot. You want to do Orton and Styles? Fine. They've had one, I think they've had one match on TV so far. But no actual like program, no pay-per-view matches. God help us all if the plan for Randy Orton is a singles match against the Great Khali at SummerSlam. Even this idea I've seen floated that I don't necessarily buy of Khali and Jinder Mahal as a tag team against John Cena and Randy Orton is so preposterous to me. And it's obvious that's just a rumor and nothing more. They're obviously setting up for a championship match at SummerSlam. So I mean, I didn't buy into that tag team idea in the first place. I'm not even sure where that came from, why you would have the WWE champion in a tag team match on your second biggest show of the year. That's just completely stupid. But all these ideas I'm hearing, and then you see what happened at Battleground. Oh my God, are they going to do an Orton Khali? I don't even want to see Orton Khali on TV, let alone on SummerSlam. Randy Orton has had a terrible year when it comes to pay-per-view matches. He had that awful feud with Bray Wyatt. They never gelled well together. Their matches were boring. Then he transitions from that into a feud with Jinder Mahal. And they go on to have a bunch of boring matches. I was more entertained by Orton against the Singh brothers. I think if they would have put Orton and the Singh brothers in handicap matches on these pay-per-views, that would have been far more entertaining. But imagine going from Bray Wyatt to Jinder Mahal to the Great Khali. Orton must have made a pass at Stephanie McMahon in the hallway or something to get that kind of treatment. Like, holy crap. Orton and AJ would be a positive move for Orton. That does more for Orton than it does for AJ at this point. You know, I mentioned Chad Gable's name a few minutes ago. Maybe him and Orton. If you don't do Styles and Gable for the U.S. title, you know, what? Orton and Gable. Orton needs some big matches. Now, Gable's not yet a big star, but I made this comment. I think I made this comment when I was on Soup the other day. There's something about the idea of a Randy Orton Chad Gable feud and the matches they would have, that reminds, without having even seen it yet, that reminds me of Orton and Christian from 2011. Because Christian, right, really good wrestler, great personality, and he has this feud with Orton, and they go on to have some of the best matches all year. I mean, those guys had incredible chemistry. Whatever it was that Orton had with Bray Wyatt and Jinder Mahal, Randy had the opposite of that with Christian, and they had some kick-ass matches on TV, on pay-per-view. My favorite one was probably the one at SummerSlam, which was like a no-DQ type of match. Those guys worked great together. And I'm just thinking in my head, what would it be like to do Gable and Orton? Well, what it does for Orton is it gets him, it's probably an easy win, because, you know, he would win, and should win. Certainly the first match, Randy Orton should go over. He'd no doubt get probably his best match of the year out of it, and it would do wonders for Chad Gable to work with somebody high up on the card like Randy Orton. So to me, it's a win-win all around if you want to do that match. How you get there? Well, you got to figure that out, but, you know, it could be as simple as Gable looking to make a name for himself. He's almost jealous of Jason Jordan. He's envious of his friend, his partner. Look at what he's doing now. Big things over on Raw. It's time that, you know, I do big things here on SmackDown, and I'm going to call out, you know, maybe he just interrupts Orton, who's doing a promo. Orton is, you know, he's got no SummerSlam opponent, and out comes Chad Gable. I mean, there's some simple ways that you can get to the match if you really wanted to. But, you know, for a guy who won the championship at WrestleMania and has had a bunch of pay-per-view main events so far this year, Randy Orton has had one of the worst, I think, if not his worst, year yet in terms of quality pay-per-view matches. Charlotte and Becky Lynch on this show beat Lana and Tamina. Yes, Lana and Tamina as a team. What the hell did we do to deserve that? I don't know, but the right team won. Sami Zayn and Ty Dillinger beat Maria's husband and Aiden English. Sami pinned Mike Kanellis with the Huluva kick. Talk about killing an act dead before it even has a chance to work. I wrote down here, the power of love. It's like this guy needs the power of shock paddles just to stay alive at this point here on this show. This guy is so dead. The rigor mortis has already set in on poor Mike Kanellis. Apparently it doesn't bother him though, because he's been tweeting. And there was one guy who tweeted him, one guy who obviously is not a Mike Kanellis or a Mike Bennett fan. He tweeted him and said, "Y'all were a joke in Impact Wrestling, and now you're a joke in WWE. Funny how things stay the same." To which Kanellis replied, "Except I get paid now." And then at the end, he put a bunch of money bag emojis. Nice little dig there at the powers that be in TNA. Matt Hardy even got in on the fun. He piled on. He said, "Yeah, it's nice to get a paycheck that's actually on time." I don't know what Kanellis is making, but if it's more than he was making in TNA, if him and Maria are bringing in a good income, then you know what? More power to him. I say make your money while you can. Shinsuke Nakamura beat Baron Corbin with the Kinshasa in a much better match than the one they had at Battleground. Better finish, obviously, but that was, I guess, by design because they wanted to set up the rematch. So that's why we got the crappy finish that we did at the pay-per-view. Believe it or not, There was a time in wrestling where the TV match would be the setup to the better match on the pay-per-view. I know. I just blew your mind, didn't I? But it's true. Anyway, Nakamura's win here is important because Jinder Mahal came out on the show asking for an opponent for SummerSlam when all of a sudden John Cena's music hits. You knew it wasn't going to be very long before the trumpets hit when Jinder Mahal was out there. I said it. A lot of people said it, I'm sure. It was pretty obvious months ago that's where this was going. And as I watched this, I wavered. I wavered between, thank Christ it's not Randy Orton, and oh shit, it's John Cena. And I wavered on these two emotions back and forth. You know, it's like, which devil do I choose, right? I may not have to choose either one of them, depending on what happens this Tuesday, because Daniel Bryan came out to tell John Cena that if he wants the title shot, he's going to have to earn it. If he wants to win his 17th world title at SummerSlam, he's going to have to first go through Shinsuke Nakamura on SmackDown this week to get it. So yes, we are getting the very first Cena-Nakamura match live on TV this week. What would I do? I would do Cena Nakamura as a big match for the Royal Rumble, with Nakamura winning, and then challenging AJ Styles for the WWE title at WrestleMania. That's what I would do, if you ask me. Nobody did, but that's what I would do. But of course, they have their own ideas, and so, hey, they want to do it this week? Great. I think it's going to be a fun match. I have nothing to base that on. We've never seen these two in the ring together, but I've seen enough John Cena matches where he's in there against the big-time star, and look, you may not like the guy, but John Cena has a lot of great matches on his resume with almost everybody on that roster. He's had great matches even with Randy Orton. I don't ever have to see them again, but Randy Orton, AJ Styles. I'm trying to think who else. Seth Rollins, Chris Jericho, Kevin Owens, him and Cesaro. I mean, you can go up and down the roster. I mean, Shawn Michaels, Triple H, you go back years and years. John Cena has plenty of great matches. CM Punk, Daniel Bryan. So him and Nakamura, I don't see any reason why that would be any different. I think the two of them will go out there. They'll have a really good match if they have enough time to do it. I think the crowd will help it, you know, will help make it a fun atmosphere as well. Where are they this week? I don't even know where they are this week. Let's see. Let's see where SmackDown is this week. Let's see here. Oh, God, it better not be Corpus Christi. Can you imagine? The worst possible place. Cleveland. All right, they're in Cleveland, Ohio. That's okay. Cleveland is where I will always remember Cleveland. Well, for two things. One, I know, for whatever reason, randomly, I know SummerSlam 96 was in Cleveland. So, I know that. Actually, Shawn Michaels and Vader had a pretty good match on that show. So, and the Boiler Room Brawl. Big fan of the Boiler Room Brawl with Undertaker and Mankind. But that was in Cleveland. But I also remember that Cleveland is where Stone Cold beat Kane on Raw to win back the championship the night after King of the Ring in 98. That crowd was on fire for that match. But, you know, that was Stone Cold in the Attitude Era in a championship match, right? So I guess I'm probably setting myself up for disappointment when I make comparisons like that. But they were. The crowd was on fire that night. In fact, this is what... Again, I can't... There's weird little things that I remember. Like, if you ask me about something that happened on this show 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago, it's 50-50 whether or not I'm going to remember it. But I remember in this one random Raw match from June of 1998. Okay, so how many years ago now is that? Well, what is that? 19 years ago, probably? Holy shit. I remember during that match between Austin and Kane, which I've probably seen 100 times by now, someone in the crowd, on the hard camera, somebody in the crowd had a sign that said, "Send help, the Gund is on fire." Because it used to be the Gund Arena, then I think it was the Q, now it's the Quicken Loans Center, or some lame shit like that. All these arenas have such lame names now. But I do remember that. So Cleveland, I've not been to Cleveland before, but Cleveland's okay with me. The thing that bothers me, because there's been a lot of hatred directed towards this match. Why are they doing this? They're blowing this match with no build. Yes, everything that people are saying makes sense. It doesn't make me mad, though. Like, I'm actually looking forward to seeing the match. If they want to give away a match like that, then great. I'll be watching. I'll enjoy it. Here's what bothers me. What bothers me about doing a big match like this on TV, especially for the first time, it is a special thing. It's the fact that we get commercials with it. And I know a lot of you, the way you watch the shows, you can fast forward the commercials, or you have TiVo, you have no commercials. So for you, you don't have to worry about that. But when I watch the show, usually I still have to sit through the commercials, and I fucking hate commercials. So we wouldn't have to deal with this if this were on pay-per-view. I really do think the commercials, they really kill the flow of these matches. So if this is going to be like a 6-minute match or a 9-minute match at the very end with a non-finish, one of those types of deals where they save the big match for like 6 months from now, they may be able to do this match in one segment without taking a break. I have a feeling, though, this is going to be a match that goes through one or two commercial breaks. And I'd rather get a big match like this without having the interruption. So for me personally, that's what bothers me. Now, I know SmackDown does the picture-in-picture thing now with they show the ad and you can see the match during the commercial break. But I don't think they do that for main events, and I'm not sure why. For main events, though, I don't believe they do that. But anyway, looking back on SmackDown this week, SmackDown was a much better show than Battleground. And when your free TV show is better than your pay-per-view, that's not really how it's supposed to work. You know, the free shows have always been two-hour infomercials for the bigger shows. They are giant advertisements for the pay-per-views. They are giant advertisements for the network shows. You know, it's like certain movies. You can watch the trailer for certain films, and the trailer ends up being better than the movie. Or they give away the entire movie in the trailer, and it's like, well, what's the point in watching the movie if you already gave away all the cool scenes? Well, for the story? For the dialogue? You're blowing up robots and shit. It's not Shakespeare. But that's what WWE pay-per-views have become in some ways. And that's a good way to describe, I think, what we have here with Cena and Nakamura this week. Again, it doesn't anger me the way that it angers some other people. But they're giving away their best stuff in the trailer and giving me little incentive to want to watch the main feature. You know, it's a weird world that we live in where the first match ever between John Cena and Shinsuke Nakamura is on TV to set up who gets to wrestle Jinder Mahal for the WWE title at SummerSlam. I'm less bothered by them giving us the match this week and more bothered that it's to determine who faces Jinder Mahal. There is something very wrong with this picture here. If you were upset to see the end of Talking Smack as a weekly series on the network, you're in luck. Because now there's Smacking Talk with Renee Young and Daniel Bryan on Tout after SmackDown. At least this week. I don't know if they're going to continue to do it every week. They say they will. And yes, Tout is still a thing. I had to check. I really honestly wasn't sure. I thought it went away. But Tout is still, you can still download the app and everything. I won't, but it's on there. And it's their kind of knockoff version, their cheap amateur version of Talking Smack, where they're just standing backstage. And they had Chad Gable as their first guest. And the angle here, it was only 5 minutes long, but the angle here was they did a paternity test and the results came back. And Daniel Bryan is, in fact, the father of Chad Gable. And Gable was skeptical of this, to say the least. He correctly pointed out that Bryan is only 5 years older than him. And Bryan says, well, I was a very virile toddler. How could Vince McMahon not like this show? How could Vince McMahon not watch this and think, huh, this isn't benefiting my company? So anyway, if you are very upset about the demise of Talking Smack, you could check out Smacking Talk on Tout. Or Twitter. That's how I watched it. I didn't download Tout. Fuck Tout. I was watching this on Twitter, and it was only about 5 minutes long, and it was amazing. So hopefully they'll do more of them.
I'm actually not wearing pants, and that's how I watch NXT every single week.
NXT this week, we had Lady Tapa, who spent some time working on TNA TV a few years ago, if you remember her from TNA. Made her NXT debut against Ember Moon. The Barbarian actually is her uncle and helped train her. That's one of the only things I remember about Lady Tapa was that the Barbarian is her uncle. I certainly would not want to piss her off if I knew that bit of information. Because what that means is that no offense to the Barbarian, I would, you know, not want to mess with him. But what that means is that the Barbarian knows Haku. And if that were to get back to Haku, that you did something wrong to Lady Tapa, then you got a problem with Haku, and then you may as well just write out your will and testament, because you ain't going to be around for much longer. But this didn't seem to faze Ember Moon. She won with the Eclipse, only about a 2-minute match. Ember cut a promo on Asuka after challenging her to a match at TakeOver Brooklyn, which William Regal later granted. Speaking of Asuka, PW Insider had an interesting stat up on its website this week. On August 17th, now that's 2 days before the next TakeOver show. If Asuka makes it to August 17th as the champion, which she will surpass Rockin' Robin as the longest reigning WWE Women's Champion of the last 30 or so years. She will be at just over 500 days as the Women's Champion. Very impressive. We had two lambs being led to slaughter in this next match. Timothy Bumpers and David Ramos against the Authors of Pain. Nikki Cross cut them off as the Authors of Pain were coming down the aisle. She got in front of them and blocked them. And Killian Dane and Alexander Wolfe got in the ring from behind. They jumped the two jobbers in the ring and beat them down. And Authors of Pain finally came down. They had a stare down. It broke down into a brawl, and the Authors of Pain kicked their asses. This wasn't even like a back-and-forth brawl between these guys. They kicked their asses. A lopsided ass-kicking of sanity here. And man, you know things are bad with tag teams when you start a program with sanity, a heel team against another heel team in the AOP. Like, this is the best they could do right now. I mean, they already beat Heavy Machinery. TM61, there, you know, one of them is still out hurt. And if they do put Red Dragon together, they haven't yet. So I guess we'll see in the next month or so if things get better. But man, even the tag team division in NXT is just the freaking drizzling shits right now. Thea Trinidad confronted No Way Jose. We saw footage earlier in the day in the parking lot as he arrived at Full Sail. For whatever reason, there was a camera following him. I guess maybe when everybody arrives to Full Sail, they have a camera following them. We just never get to see it unless something happens. That's how I like to think about it, you know, keep kayfabe and everything. So she confronted him, and she gave him a stern warning about not to mess with Andrade Cien Almas. Her new name, by the way, in WWE is now Zelina Vega. Zelina Vega is her new name. The Velveteen Dream was in action. He pinned Cesar Bonani with the Purple Rainmaker elbow off the top. It does annoy me a little bit that he has the name Rainmaker for his finish, but whatever. We had a Drew McIntyre promo on this show. This was really good. This was the best McIntyre promo since he has come back to WWE. He had fire. He had passion. He spoke to the audience. He got the audience involved. By the end, the audience was going nuts. You know, when he first came out, they were quiet. Full Sail's been very quiet of late. But by the end, he had everybody in the palm of his hand. And he was talking, you know, because Bobby Roode says, this is my NXT. And the whole point of this was, this is not your NXT. This is their NXT. This is the fans. It belongs to the fans. And everybody was on their feet chanting, we, you know, NXT, we are NXT. I mean, this was great. This was great stuff. And this is exactly what we need to see more of, because I've made the comment that McIntyre has been cold as a block of ice on this show. And that's largely because we haven't seen much of him. So I haven't been terribly excited about him wrestling for the championship yet. But they've got, you know, 2 or 3 weeks to really get things going and get me really excited about this match. Because right now, I'm not feeling a title change. I mean, I think it's inevitable it's going to happen. But if you ask me right now, who would I pick in that match? I'd go with Bobby Roode and drag that thing out a little bit longer. Because, you know, I just, there's got to be more. There's got to be more of a reason for me to want to see this guy win the championship. And Roode's had a really good thing going for a while now. So they had a good thing here on this show with this promo. This was really hot stuff. Roode's going to be on the show next week, I guess, to respond. And we'll see where they go from there. But this was great. Johnny Gargano made his return to action, or he will. I'm getting ahead of myself here. He is going to be returning to the ring on NXT this upcoming Wednesday against NXT's newest star, a name you may remember from the Cruiserweight Classic, Raul Mendoza. Kind of random, but he is now on NXT. He cut a little promo backstage. Main event was Hideo Itami against Cassius Ohno. They were having a good match before they did the finish to the Baron Corbin Shinsuke Nakamura match last Sunday and had Itami kick Ohno square in the nutsack for the disqualification. I feel like we've seen this finish more than a few times lately. I know we saw it at Battleground, but I feel like we've seen it on TV recently somewhere else. I can't put my finger on exactly what match it was. So I think we've seen enough kicks to the nuts ending matches recently where we could put that finish to bed for a little bit. Anyway, once Itami found out that he was disqualified, he snapped and he started wrecking Ohno with these chest kicks that I have not seen probably since yesterday or the day before in the G1, honestly. But he just... Here's the thing I wanted to mention, though. I don't see anybody else mentioning it, probably because it's such a stupid little thing. I'm the only one, you know, nuts enough to even bring this up. But one of the things I loved about what the aftermath of this match, if you noticed, was the ringing of the bell. It's like, it's the little things like that that kind of put a smile on my face. They don't really do that on TV anymore, right? When there's a big brawl, when chaos breaks out, what used to happen back in the day? Ding, 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 ding. Over and over, the bell would ring. And it just added to it. You know, like now Kevin Dunn with the shaky cam. Oh, we got to make it seem like it's mass chaos. Shake the camera. Right? As Vince gives his directive. That's kind of one of the things we see them do a lot of now. One of the things I'd like to see them go back to doing is more of this. Because when it's all pandemonium and havoc and stuff, just furiously ringing the bell like that, I don't know. It just makes things sound more urgent. Just a little stupid thing. Nothing major. But when I heard it here, I immediately, you know, I immediately thought to myself, man, it's been a while since I've heard that. So anyway, Itami gave Ono not one but two GTSs. He dragged them out to the floor. He dropped them face first across the ring steps. Ono, as they went off the air and faded to black, was just slobbering all over himself. And so the heel turn is complete. And I think if Itami goes back to this, like the really violent version of what he used to be before he came to NXT, I think he'll do okay. Sad tweet. May as well do sad tweet here because Medusa, Alundra Blaze, call her what you will. She has both names listed on her Twitter page. She is, of course, helping with the Mae Young Classic. She was there. I don't know what she did because she wasn't out there doing commentary or anything, but apparently she was helping out and she's been promoting it. And that's cool. That's really cool that she's sort of back in the family, back in the fold. I like Medusa, so that's cool. But I have to give her sad tweet this week. She is, as you know, promoting the Mae Young Classic, like I said, hard on Twitter. Well, she took a break from that. And without getting into the politics of her tweet, which I have no interest in doing, this has nothing to do with the substance of her tweet. That's for other people to talk about. It has everything to do with the whole idea of the old tweet and delete. We've seen lots of people do this before. Ryan Satin grabbed the screenshot. This was after Trump came out this week and he banned all transgender people from serving in the military. She tweeted out, "Let's just get this straight. Serving in the military is a privilege, not a fucking right, and it's not a social experiment." And then she put about 5 exclamation points at the end of that. Now, my understanding is her husband is an army major. She's certainly entitled to her opinion. But the fact that she posted it just long enough for people to see it and then pulled it, the old tweet and delete, no guts. Show some guts. You know, like, I like Medusa. She wrestled and she drove monster trucks for a living. What's not to like? She's a cool lady. But what a chicken shit thing to do. You know what I mean? Like, if you're going to tweet about stuff like that, you know it's going to be a hot button topic. You know, she's got however many tens of thousands of followers on her Twitter page. You put that up and then, ooh, let's quickly take it down. If that's what you believe in, then keep it up. Again, I'm not going to sit here and say whether she's right or wrong. Do I believe what she said or not? I'm just talking about putting the tweet up and then immediately taking it down. And you know what? If you have to do that, if you tweet stuff and find that, oh, I better not, oh, that's probably a mistake, I shouldn't have said that, then why are you tweeting about it in the first place? I swear, social media, with these wrestlers and these celebrities, social media, Twitter, it shaves a good 30 points off their IQ. And how many times have we seen these Twitter disasters where people tweet out stuff that they realize after the fact, oh, I shouldn't have done that or I shouldn't have said that, and it just blows up in their face. It seriously dumbs them down. It's actually made them dumber. Speaking of dumber, that brings me to Global Force Wrestling. Ed Nordholm, the master of the owls, gave an interview to Sports Illustrated, said that Anthem has 100% of the rights to the Broken Universe as per the language in Matt Hardy's contract. This is just the war that will not end. He also claims that he had a deal on the table with Matt and Jeff to come back, because remember, their contracts were coming due, and they ended up leaving. But they had deals to stay. They were going to stay with Global Force at the time, Impact. But at the 11th hour, Matt said, "I want an extra $100,000, which Anthem he claims Anthem couldn't do it. We couldn't afford it, he said. He hasn't blamed Matt Hardy. He says Matt Hardy's looking out for himself and his family, and that's fine, but we could not afford the extra $100,000. Matt Hardy was pissed about this. He disputes all of this. He says Nordholm blatantly lied in an effort to defame him. He claims he has the entire conversation, whatever conversation they had about the contract negotiations and stuff, he has the entire conversation recorded for proof, and that he is checking with his lawyers to see what course of action to take. The belief is that the Hardys, or Matt, will file suit soon against Anthem. It looks like this thing is going to get nastier and it's going to go to court." Well, you can imagine his wife Rebby's reaction to all of this. She claims No Cred Ed, which is her name for Ed Nordholm, is lying, and also says that They have recorded conversations to prove it. Apparently, the law in North Carolina, in the state of North Carolina, is one-party consent, which means that so long as one party consents to the recording of the conversation, it's perfectly legal. There are other states where it's illegal. You have to let the other person know if you are recording them. North Carolina is not one of those states. The laws in each state are different. New York is also a one-party consent state. Now, Rebbe also went on a Twitter tirade against Jeff Jarrett, probably the harshest of the tweets being this one. Let's keep it real. Jeff Jarrett burns bridges like he burns through Kurt Angle's alimony money. They were never going to cooperate. Ouch. Ouch. That's pretty harsh. Probably true, but harsh. And also, there was a bit of a setback for GFW and all this week. Their trademark applications, there were four different trademarks they were applying for. Broken Matt, Brother Nero, Broken Brilliance, and Vanguard One. They were all rejected by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, each one for different reasons. The Broken Matt one, for instance, was denied due to the potential confusion with Matt's own application that he filed many months ago for the name, which was in the interest of being fair here. I believe I had read that Matt's application was also initially denied when he filed it, so this is not unusual that Anthem, I guess, would have theirs rejected. It just so happened in this case they had four different ones rejected for four entirely different reasons. They could always reapply. They may end up getting them in the end, but the fight rages on, and there may well be a lawsuit coming, and when it comes to lawsuits and litigation, that could drag out for months, that could drag out for years. And you would think that Anthem, as a big company, would probably have more resources and more money at their disposal than Matt Hardy would. So I've about given up on the idea that the broken stuff is ever coming to WWE. That's even assuming WWE at that point wants to do it. 6 months from now, a year from now, who's to say? Wouldn't it be a kick in the crotch for Matt if this goes to court and in the end he gets everything he wants, but then Vince just doesn't want to use the idea? There's no guarantee of that. So I've all but given up on the idea, other than little teases here and there, that the broken stuff is ever coming to WWE television. If I were Matt, Matt's a very creative guy. People have said that about Matt Hardy from back when he was helping to run the Omega promotion, that he was the brains of the operation. He's always been a very creative person. They could see him working in creative one day when his career is over, if that's something he wants to do. You know, if I'm Matt, keep fighting the good fight. I hope he wins. I hope he sticks it to them, and I hope he gets what he feels he deserves in the end, because he put a lot of work into it. But in the meantime, I think he would be best served to put his brain to good use and come up with a totally different idea to reinvent himself again. Because just Matt and Jeff Hardy, that's only going to last for so long before you know Vince caves and he wants Jeff to get that inevitable singles push. And Jeff wants it too. They both know that at some point they're going to break apart. Jeff's going to go out on his own. Matt's going to go out on his own. I'm not worried about Jeff. Jeff's going to be just fine. Jeff was at one point one of the hottest stars in the entire business. So he'll do just fine. It's Matt that I think of the two I would be concerned about. And so if I'm him, and maybe he already is, I'd start thinking of ideas to pitch for something else. Don't give up the fight for the broken stuff, but come up with something new, because he's not going to be broken in WWE. Not in the way that we remember him being. Lucha Underground, this was the episode titled Booyaka Booyaka. Huh, I wonder what that means. We had Tejano defeating the Mac to advance in the Cueto Cup, as we are here now in the second round. Pentagon Dark beat Drago to advance in the Cueto Cup. They said that this was their first meeting in Lucha Underground. I find that very surprising. I just feel like they're two of the originals, so I kind of automatically assume we've seen all the different combinations of them in the ring at some point, but I guess not. Pentagon hit a Canadian Destroyer on Drago. Drago kicked out. See, to me, the Canadian Destroyer is one of those moves you don't kick out of. But he did. Pentagon finished him off with a package pile driver for the win. He went to go break Drago's arm when the match was over. Cobra Moon tried to stop him, but she got super kicked in the face for her troubles. Aerostar ran in. He tried to make the save for his former friend Drago. Remember, Drago was friends with Phoenix and Aerostar. They had the Trios tag team titles, and then Cobra Moon brainwashed him, and he joined the Lizard Tribe. He's kind of under their spell now or whatever. But Aerostar won't give up yet. He's trying to save his friend, and he made the save. So he goes to shake Drago's hand, and what does this ungrateful prick do? He kicks him in the gut, and he lays him out. And he walks off, and poor Aerostar has his arm broken. Which just goes to show you that Bobby Heenan was always right when he used to say a friend in need is a pest. If Aerostar would have just kept to himself, he wouldn't have a broken arm right now. Bobby was right. Main event was Rey Mysterio against PJ Black. This is a really good main event. Marty Elias, referee, took a bump. That gave Johnny Mundo, who of course is defending his championship in a few weeks, I think about 4 weeks, 3 weeks now, against Rey Mysterio. Gave him an opening to run in. He attacked Rey. Dragon Azteca ran out to make the save, but Taya, of all people, kicked his ass. So Rey is laid out. PJ goes to cover him for the win. Ref comes to, gets a close near fall. In the end, Rey hits the 619. He hits the springboard frog splash, which was only marginally better looking than the one Sasha Banks used on Raw. And he got the win. And then after the match, Rey cut a promo on Mundo. He promised to give him a 619. He posed to the crowd, all the adulation of the fans. And that was Lucha Underground this week. So there you go. Now, there's an update here on season 4. I've been waiting here to find out, is this show coming back or not? I'm sure a lot of the wrestlers, I'm sure, are probably thinking the same thing. And if any of them are listening to this, they may want to pay attention here. Matt Fowler of IGN had the chance to speak to El Rey Network's chief creative officer, Skip Chasen, I believe is how you pronounce his name, about the future of Lucha Underground. He would not give much in the way of specifics, but he did say that the show's future, quote, looks good. And one of the things being discussed is where to place it on the network's schedule going forward. That's all he gave. But that's more than we've heard from anybody in months. So the fact that he didn't, say no comment, the fact that he said, well, we're not sure, he actually said things are looking good. Right now we're just, you know, in the middle of trying to figure out where it fits. That's a positive sign for at least the idea that they will tape a season 4. Now, I don't know what that means. You know, are they thinking about moving it to a terrible time slot? I mean, there's a lot of negative that could still come out of this. But I enjoy the show. I've been looking for any positive news at all. And this is the first little sliver of it that we've gotten from somebody who works directly either for El Rey or on the show itself. So I take that as a positive sign, and I guess we'll see. And hopefully, you know, the wrestlers hopefully either know more than we do, or they will soon, because you got to think those guys are being left in a lurch, you know, more than even us. They've got to be wondering what the hell's going on here. You know, I mean, are we doing a show or not? So hopefully we'll be able to get some more news here in the next couple of months. I believe season 3 runs until, I want to say, the end of September, I believe, is when season 3 ends. And then we're just in this period of, is Lucha Underground going to live on or not? And the uncertainty sucks. So hopefully we'll get some more definitive word in the next couple of months. The G1 Climax. Have another G1 report here. I've been thoroughly enjoying what I've been watching. Unfortunately, with everything that's been going on, as I talked about at the beginning of the show, last 2 or 3 days, I have not been able to catch up on any G1. I am behind. I think now they're up to like day 9 or something. I've watched up until day 7. Anything after that, I have not seen. But just to go day by day here from what I did see and just give my thoughts, from day 5, which is where I started the week, there was a match. It was Hiroshi Tanahashi against Yuji Nagata. I enjoyed that match a great deal, and what was unique about it was Tanahashi was healing it up here in this match. You know, he's the ace of New Japan. He's one of the biggest baby faces they've got. And here he was healing it. It's like Rock, right? When Rock wrestled Hulk Hogan, and even maybe one of the matches with Steve Austin, like, but in the match with Hogan specifically, you could tell, you could read his face, like Rock was maybe not expecting quite the negative reaction that he was getting. And as the match went on, he was adapting. He was adapting to the crowd reaction. He was acting a little more heelish. And that's what Tanahashi was doing here. He was reacting to a crowd that, for whatever reason, really loved Yuji Nagata. And maybe somebody can fill me in on why this particular crowd seemed to be overly enamored with him. I don't know if this was his hometown or what the significance was. I don't even know where night or day five was, where it was held. But Nagata was beloved by this crowd. And these two smacked the shit out of each other to the point where Nagata was bleeding underneath the eye. To say that this was hard-hitting would be an understatement. There was a top rope exploder by Nagata at one point. Tanahashi hit a high fly flow to Nagata while he was standing. So now Nagata's down. He goes back up top, hits a regular high fly flow, and gets the win. And I just thought this was a great match. This was a battle. This was a battle. Now, on that same show, there was a match between Kota Ibushi and Tomohiro Ishii, two of my favorites to watch in New Japan. If you asked me, as an American wrestling fan who tries to watch New Japan when I can, do I have a favorite? Who are my favorites? What's my top three? I don't know, like in rank order, but these two would these two at Okada, but these two and Suzuki, but these two would definitely be on my list. So I see that they're wrestling each other and I'm like, oh man, this should be a lot of fun. And it was. They did not disappoint. This was another great match here from day five. The main thing I remember from this, though, looking back on it, all the hard slaps. These guys really, I mean, you see the hard slaps and the open hand, like the palm strikes and everything in a lot of these matches, but they were just going back and forth, trading blows until finally, I think Ishii it was, just collapsed onto the mat. I think Ishii spit on Kota at one point and Kota went nuts with kicks. That didn't sit too well with him, as you would imagine. Ibushi won in the end with the Golden Star Powerbomb, so he picks up 2 points for the win. Day six, this was the night that had that very polarizing match that was the talk of the Facebook group. It was the talk on Twitter between Kenny Omega and Toriano. This was a total comedy match. Toriano is a total comedy character. So it's not surprising that these guys did comedy in this match, that it was a lot of comic relief. Some people absolutely hated this match. Some people loved it, thought it was a lot of fun. I'm kind of in between. I'm in the middle. I thought, you know, Yano stuff usually amuses me with the DVD and everything. I get a kick out of the guy. As a matter of fact, my favorite part of the match was the very first thing that happened in the match after the bell rang. In like the first minute, 90 seconds maybe of the match, he handed Kenny Omega his DVD that he takes everywhere with him. He told Omega, open it up, open it up. And when Omega finally opens it, it was filled with salt. And Toriano knocked it up into his face, blinded him, and he quickly tried to roll Omega up for a near fall. That was funny. I thought that was funny. Now, the stuff where he tied Omega's feet together and Omega tied his legs together and they were hopping around like a bunch of bunny rabbits, and Omega at one point was, quote, running the ropes while, you know, basically hopping into the ropes. Eh. You know what I think it is? I'll tell you what I think it is. I like the comedy stuff, but when I see a guy like Kenny Omega, and I know Kenny Omega has wrestled blow-up dolls, I know Kenny Omega has wrestled 9-year-old girls, but right now he's the United States champion, right? He's essentially the face of this New Japan brand here in this country. He's one of the biggest stars overall in New Japan. And he's had some pretty serious, intense matches in this tournament against guys like Minoru Suzuki, against guys like Michael Elgin. So to see him here in the same tournament doing goofy comedy with Yano, it kind of took me out of it a little bit. Like the stuff Yano did with Okada, remember I talked about that. He had a match with Okada. Okada's not a comedy wrestler. Okada's a champion. He's the top dog. He's the top guy in New Japan. The stuff that Yano did with Okada was very different. That worked. That actually turned into an exciting match in those last few minutes. They were trading holds and slaps and near falls. People were into it. It was like a serious match. So I think in comparing those two, that's why that worked, where this one kind of made me go, eh. But Omega managed to cut himself free. Chase Owens from Bullet Club ran down, handed him a pair of scissors. Yano's feet, though, were still tied together. And when Omega hit the V-trigger knee and knocked him out of the ring, Yano had no way of getting back into the ring before the count of 20, and so he was counted out. I didn't hate this, but I also can't say I didn't really like it that much. Aside from that opening spot that I did like. But I'm kind of in the middle on this, to be honest. That show also had a main event of Okada against Sanada in the battle of the former TNA stars. Both of them were in TNA at one point. Two of the ones that got away. They actually, I will say this about TNA. They gave Sanada a decent push as the X Division champion while he was there. It didn't last very long, but they did actually give him a little bit of a push when he came in. Okada, not so much. But this was a really good match. I've not really seen much of Sanada. I'll be honest, I've seen none of Sanada as a single star since he left TNA. So he's changed his look. He's a little bit bigger. He's not that, I don't even know how to describe it. He was such a babyface in TNA. And now he's like, it's like night and day. You just look at the guy. So he changed his look up. And I was impressed. I have to say, I was very impressed by this. They had a really good match. I love the move that Sanada does where he takes the Ric Flair bump in the corner over the ropes and then immediately jumps onto the top rope and does a springboard back into the ring. That's very impressive. Okada won in the end with the Rainmaker, but Sanada looked good here. And then from day 7, which was the last day that I saw, I don't remember if that would have been Wednesday maybe, I saw the Tanahashi match against Hirooki Goto. Every Tanahashi match in this tournament has basically followed the same formula. Work over the injured arm. He's still out there having great matches, but I watched this guy knowing that his arm is all jacked up. He's got the bicep tear. He probably should have surgery. It kills me every time somebody goes after the arm. They put him in an arm bar. They hyperextend the arm. So I guess it does add drama to the match. I'm not going to lie. It adds drama to all of his matches because every time somebody does that, I cringe. For real. I cringe. But it has not really affected his performances at all. He's not half-assing it out there. He's not having substandard matches. He's out there having great matches. And he won with the high fly flow. He beat Goto. And I'm watching this thinking to myself, what building is this? I love that building. That building they had that show in on day 7. It's small, but like the look of the show and how they had everything set up, the way they had the building set up and everything, I don't know why, I just really liked it. After the match, Tanahashi spent a very long time on the microphone and he started crying. Now, I don't speak Japanese, so I had no idea what he was saying, so I had to scour around to see if anybody had a translation for what he was talking about. The best I could come up with is someone on Twitter who I saw said that Tanahashi said it's been 6 years since he defended the IWGP title in Sendai, which I guess was the city they were in. Actually, I think that was the building, the hotel. So basically, it's been 6 years since he defended the title there, and he's held that place in his heart ever since. And then he went around the ring. He got mobbed by people, and he does this thing all the time where people will hand him flags and towels, and he'll wipe his sweat and give it back to them, which I've always found a little creepy. But, this guy gets the rock star treatment when he's out there. Believe me, there's plenty of rock stars here in this country. I bet if somebody took a, they pissed in a cup, the fan, oh, throw it on me. People are fucking sick. But anyway, look, great example. Britney Spears. Remember the gum? Right? Years ago, there was a chewed piece of gum from Britney Spears that somebody stole. They took and they put on eBay. They were selling her chewed gum on eBay. Now, at least that guy probably doesn't give a shit about the gum or Britney Spears. He just wants to make a buck. The fact that there would be people bidding on that and buying it and wanting that and spending money on that is what makes me very, very scared for the society that we live in. So there's some sick puppies out there. But anyway, I do have to say, and I'm not trying to equate those very kind Japanese fans with people who would buy Britney Spears gum. I'm just saying it's a little weird. But I said before, I love the look of the show. So I looked it up. It's a small building, very intimate. It's the Sendai Sun Plaza. It's actually a hotel, which I didn't know until I looked it up. It is a hotel. They use the concert hall inside to do events. They could fit about 2,500 people in there, 2,800, something like that. So it's very intimate. I just really loved the look and the feel of it. Night 5, I think it was, that first show I was talking about earlier, they did that show from a gymnasium in Tokyo that was very darkly lit. I didn't like the look of that show at all. But this one I loved. And one of the things about the G1 is that you're in all these different buildings, night after night after night. G1 goes on for an entire month. And they go back to like Corken Hall and they'll run the same building multiple times, but they go to different buildings and each building has its own identity. Some are bigger than others. Some are lit better. They're lighted differently. The arenas in this country are so boring. They all look the same. Forget the crappy names. They all look the same now. They have no identity. Even Madison Square Garden used to have that little aisleway on one side. Now they did away with it and it just looks like every other building. I mean, they have a little catwalk that's up on, you know, up in the air. But aside from that, it's just, it's so dull. So when I see things like this, it stands out to me. And again, I can't tell you why, but I'm watching this show. I'm like, man, this is, I like this. I like this building. And I had no idea that it was a hotel. In any event, I have not had a chance to see any of the shows beyond day 7. I don't even know what they're on now. Day 10, probably. With everything that's been going on, I'm sure I'll try to catch up at some point. But I do know this. I do know that there is a show this Tuesday, I believe it is, Tuesday morning, that has Tanahashi against Kota Ibushi. That's a match I'm looking forward to seeing. Let's get to some mailbag questions. Not going to be a terribly big mailbag this week because I got to get out of here soon, but TheSolomonster@gmail.com is the place to send all of your questions. Please include your name and where you are from if you want to have a shot at having the question used here on the air. Jeff from Winter Park, Florida. How do you think Roman Reigns would do in New Japan? It's a very timely question since I just got done talking about the G1. I think Roman Reigns would do very well in New Japan. I think Roman Reigns would do very well against a lot of the guys over there in New Japan. I think he'd fit right into a group like Bullet Club. In the ring, I think he would do great against guys like Kenny Omega, or Okada, or Ibushi, or Ishii. Actually, now that I say that out loud, I think Reigns and Kota Ibushi would be actually a hell of a match. But I think he would have some outstanding matches over there. I really do. Mike from Singapore, I was listening to your interview with Justin Roberts, where he mentions Triple H can be a bit of a bully backstage, as well as Chris Jericho's recent podcast about Chris Benoit. I wanted to know, where do you draw the line between being able and not able to support a wrestler based on the way they conduct themselves in real life? Fans seem to have mostly turned their backs on Benoit, Jimmy Snuka, and Moolah. While it seems significantly fewer people have qualms about supporting backstage bullies like Triple H, Shawn Michaels, and others, where do you stand on a wrestler's personal life affecting your fandom? Don't kill your wife and kid. Don't kill your mistress. I'd say those are two pretty good places to draw the line, wouldn't you? Other than that, I don't know. I can't give you a straight answer on that. Everybody is different. I don't have a set rule. I'm not a robot. I'm a human being, right? I can think things and feel things and change my mind, and I don't have like a red line that cannot be crossed, other than things like rape and murder and stuff like that. You know, there is no red line. Look, if you do something that offends me, then it may affect how I look at you. Shawn Michaels may have been a dick to a lot of people 20 years ago, but you could argue the wrestling business is full of people like that. Does that mean I can't separate how they act behind the scenes to their persona on TV? Do I just stop watching wrestling? I can watch Chris Benoit matches today. Some people can't. I can. Some people can't bring themselves to do it, though. Everybody is different. I would say for me, things like murder and rape would change my mind on most people. Most other things, I can pretty easily tune out. Nick from Brighton, Massachusetts. I was curious if you knew anything about the 1993 WWF Women's Title Tournament. I have seen the brackets, but no footage or photos besides the finale. Do you know if these matches actually took place? Also, why did they only have 6 women? This is a very timely question with the Mae Young Classic airing next month. They have 32 women in that tournament. They only had 6 here in this one, which I agree was very weird. It's a weird number, right? At least you would want to have at least 8. They had 6. And it's not like they did not have plenty of other women out there even then, even in their own company. Like in 93, they had Sherry and they had Luna. Although I don't remember when Sherry left. The last I remember Sherry was around WrestleMania 9 when Luna first came in. I think Luna beat her up. I don't remember much from her after that, so it's possible she may have been... She probably was gone by the time they did that tournament later in the year. The only thing I can tell you is that they taped the finals at a Raw taping. It was Alundra Blaze winning the title from Heidi Lee Morgan. It was killing me, the name of the woman, because I had the woman's face in my head, but I couldn't think of the name, so I quickly looked it up. It was Heidi Lee Morgan. It didn't actually air on Raw. It did air on an episode of All American Wrestling that aired Christmas weekend in 1993. That entire show was, I remember that, entire show was hosted in studio by Vince McMahon. I remember the Christmas tree behind him. I actually found the show. It is up on YouTube, the December 26th episode from 1993. I'm pretty sure that is the only match from the tournament that actually aired on TV. I don't know, honestly, if those other matches actually took place. That'd be a good question for somebody maybe to tweet to Medusa. Maybe she would know, since she's on Twitter now, obviously tweeting about everything under the sun. I don't know if those other matches took place or if it was a Pat Patterson and Rio de Janeiro type of phantom thing where they just said, they said that they had the first round of the semifinals and they just put Alundra out there with Heidi Lee Morgan and that was the only actual match. I don't know. But looking back at that tournament, you know, you reminding me of it, it's, I think it's fair to say we've come a long way since then. To go from 6 women in this tournament that may or may not have even happened to 32 women. And they're making such a big deal now about the women these days and the women's revolution and all this other stuff. I'm just talking from the company's mentality. We've come a long way from the way they used to look at the women back then. Geraint. Just wondering what you thought of the rest of the Survivor Series 1997 card. It's crazy, but all I know of is the screwjob. I could not tell you what any of the other matches were or who won them. Yeah, you know, the 97 Survivor Series is not really one as a whole to go back and watch. I thought it was a pretty bad show, actually. And the only other things I remember... Well, I remember a few things. I remember one of the Survivor Series matches had Steve Blackman in it because he had just debuted on TV. He was like a fan who ran in and attacked Vader, I think, and he was part of one of the Survivor Series matches with, it was probably Bulldog and Shamrock and Vader and them. So, and I think Furnace and LaFon maybe was in there, so my memory on that is fuzzy. The two main things I remember, other than the screw job, were both singles matches. I remember Steve Austin and Owen Hart had no business being in the ring. That was a terrible match. That was the worst Steve Austin-Owen Hart match, and probably the shortest, you will ever see. Austin had no business being back in the ring with his neck in the condition it was in. Owen had like a major concussion from only, I think, I don't know if it was a month earlier or a few weeks earlier. It might have been in a match with Farouk. He got his bell rung. He had no business being in there. If that were today, with the concussion testing and everything, he'd be out for 6 months. They never would have let him back in the ring. So you got this guy who's concussed. You got this guy who almost broke his neck, had a stinger. And they put them in the ring, and Austin won the IC title back, and it was just a bad match. It was a terrible match. That was also Kane's first match, was against Mankind on that pay-per-view. The only thing I remember about that match, I remember him chokeslamming Mankind on the steel ramp. And that match was, it was in the dark red lighting. Because when Kane first debuted, his first few matches had that red lighting in the arena, like Sin Cara had the blue lighting. Kane had the red lighting. He beat Mankind. That's it. That's all I remember from that show. The other stuff, it was probably, they were doing gang wars back then. It was probably something with the Barriquas and DOA and the Nation and the Truth Commission and all this other nonsense, which I was not a fan of. So yeah, I would say Survivor Series 97 is a very, it's a historically significant show for obvious reasons, but it's a very skippable show. Glenn from Chicago, does Vicky Guerrero deserve to be in the WWE Hall of Fame? You know, deserve is a funny word. Does anybody deserve to be in the Hall of Fame? I don't know. Should she be? Would I put her in there? Absolutely. Without question. Absolutely. And I think one day she will be. Frank, in Atlanta, Georgia. I always wondered why Shawn Michaels only held the world title one time after his return in 2002. He was in the title picture several times with Triple H, Chris Benoit, Randy Orton, and headline WrestleMania against John Cena. Why was he champion only once during his second run? Did Vince not think he was a draw? Was he there just to get younger guys over? Did he not want to? Do you know the reason? My understanding was that he did not want it. They gave him that token run with it for a month in 02. He beat his best friend for it. He lost it back to his best friend. And that was something Triple H, I guess, wanted to do. But it just wasn't something he wanted. I mean, and had he gone to SmackDown at some point, it's possible they could have put that title on him, but it conflicted the story with him not going to SmackDown. And the reason he always stayed on Raw was it conflicted with his Bible study classes, which is why he never went there. But he didn't need it. You know, he didn't need the title, and he probably knew that. Jay from the UK, based on the assumption that both divisions are done correctly, buy or sell on which one you would have on your show. The Cruiserweight division with Kota Ibushi and Okada, or the UK division with Zack Sabre Jr. and Will Ospreay. How the hell do you get Okada in the Cruiserweight division? That doesn't make any sense. So you're saying, okay, if the divisions were done the right way, right, with the right talents, which would I want on my show? I probably would buy on the UK and sell on the Cruiserweight division because I like a lot of those UK guys. And I'm actually really bummed because apparently the UK, the plans that they had for this UK series on the network, I don't know if it's canceled, but it's on hold now. It's like on hold indefinitely. And of course it is. You don't have to wonder why. Once the ITV World of Sport thing fell through, that was it. That was the whole purpose behind them signing Jim Ross and moving ahead because they were worried. Now it looks like the ITV thing is dead. It's not happening. And so all of a sudden, you know what? We don't have to rush so quickly. All of a sudden, it's amazing when somebody starts to compete and somebody starts, starts sniffing around how WWE, they get all, they start making moves. So yeah, of course, the ITV thing is dead. And so now we may not even get a UK series. Meanwhile, they have all these guys under contract, so they could do with them what they wanted. They got what they wanted. They wanted them on the dotted line. They got them. They basically control them. I mean, those guys are working matches over in the UK, but they're under contract to WWE. So WWE got exactly what they wanted. What I'm disappointed in, you got Pete Dunne as the UK champion. They don't do anything where we could at least watch some of his matches on the net. Look, I don't even care if you take some of those ICW matches or Progress or whatever it is and simulcast them on the network. But they don't do any of that. The last Pete Dunne match I can remember seeing was the one he had with Tyler Bate, and that was incredible. That was incredible. I'm hoping that they add a UK title match to the card at SummerSlam. I've only seen little whispers and rumors about it. The hell with that. Book it. Put Pete Dunne back on there with Tyler Bate. Put Pete Dunne on there against Wolfgang or somebody. There should be a UK title match on that SummerSlam card. We don't get to see any of it. So they have Pete Dunne and Mark Andrews and Wolfgang and, a bunch of other people. I think Trent Seven and, I don't know. I don't know what's going on. I don't see him. I don't see him on NXT. I don't see him on the network anywhere. I don't see him on Raw, SmackDown. They've just sort of vanished. And it's such a waste. But I love watching those guys. I love the UK style. I was a big, big fan of the UK tournament when they did that on the network at the beginning of the year. I was excited to see what a UK show from the UK was actually going to look like. And now we may not have a chance to see it. But if it were up to me, I think you've got this just plethora of great British talent out there. Forget Zack Sabre and Will Ospreay. I mean, they're obviously very talented, and I would probably want them as part of the division, but there's so many other guys. And I just think the style, look, it got over. right? That match with Tyler Bate and Pete Dunne in front of that crowd. I'm trying to think where that was. If that was in Brooklyn, that wasn't in Brooklyn. That was that Orlando? I don't even remember where it was now. It might have been over WrestleMania weekend. It's been so many months. Point is, it was in front of a quote mainstream U.S. crowd, and the people were going nuts. By the time that match was over, people were on their feet. So, you know, you can't say, well, the British style won't get over, the Japanese style won't get over, the Lucha Libre style won't get over. No, if you do it right, and if you present it right with the right people, it can get over. And people ate that shit up. That's what I want to see more of. And so I would go with the UK division. I would buy on that, sell on the cruiserweights, beef that UK thing up, and I think that it would really add something to these shows, whether they were part of Raw, whether they were just, you know, on the network, if it was in NXT, wherever it is, I think those guys would get over. I think they would do very well for themselves. And I'd like to see them soon, because right now they're not doing anything with them. You got Pete Dunne has that belt, which, by the way, is probably the most gorgeous belt they have anywhere on the roster right now. And it's being defended by somebody who's not even on, like, mainstream television. He's got that UK championship. We need to see more of that, because Pete Dunne, and I've said this before, you know, I like a lot of those guys, but Pete Dunne is a guy who can be a big, big star. Again, he's not big. He's not big. But again, all this talk about Jon Jones and Brock Lesnar, man, what a big fight that's going to be, and wrestling fans getting all excited for a fucking, you know, 205-pound guy. You know, I don't want to hear this nonsense anymore about, well, this guy's too small. You can't. You know, I'm not interested. It can't get over. It's not going to work. Believe me, Pete Dunne, like, as a heel, Pete Dunne can get over and can become a big-time star. And right now, you may as well put his face on the side of a milk carton. You could put his face right next to Grand Metalik. Hey, Grand Metalik just popped up the other day. You want to know where? He popped up in an Up, Up, Down, Down video on YouTube. So he's there. That answers that question, but we never see him on TV. I'm telling you, they are hoarding these guys. They are signing these guys just to keep them away from everyone else. I mean, a lot of you already figured that out. But if it wasn't apparent before, it should be pretty apparent now. Whether it's the Lucha guys, the UK guys, they want them under their thumb so they control them and they can't go to some other big place or some other big promotion. In the meantime, these guys, we don't get to see them. So, what's the point? Justin, from Centerline, Michigan. Since I realize Philadelphia now has two really bad pay-per-views from WWE in its history, buy or sell? King of the Ring 1995 or Battleground 2017? Oh, God. King of the Ring 95 by far. This isn't even a question. King of the Ring 95 is truly one of the all-time worst WWE pay-per-views. The closest thing to resembling a decent match on that show was Shawn Michaels against Kama. And I remember even Shawn mouthing the word bullshit when that match was over. Literally, he mouthed the word bullshit. They did like this time limit expired finish. You know, like that was one of the worst shows I have ever seen. Battleground at least like had that great tag team match that opened the show. There weren't a lot of matches on that show that I would say worst match ever. It was just a very, very dull, boring show. This was like offensively boring. This was beyond boring. This was a horrific show. This was, I don't think unless you live through it and can remember watching it that you could truly appreciate how awful it was. Although you can go back on the network and watch it. But yeah, that was a terrible show. Battleground was much better than the King of the Ring in 95. Like, there's different levels of awful. Battleground was a bad show, but there's Battleground bad, and then there's shows like this. Or the ECW December 2 Dismember show, which I think is probably the other one that's considered one of the worst shows of all time. But man, King of the Ring 95, 95, oh my god. I told you guys before, like somebody asked me, was there ever a point where you almost stopped watching? Like you weren't a fan anymore? And I said, it was the early part of 1995. Like the spring of 95, I almost cut bait. I almost just said, I'm done with this. Because a lot of my friends had stopped watching wrestling. Like a lot of them grew out of it. They moved on to other things. I was holding on, but it was getting real tough. I toughed it out. I mean, I'm happy I did. Obviously, things got better in the next few years after that. But man, 95, for all the talented guys they had, like, you know, Sean Waltman and Hakushi, like they had Owen Hart, a lot of talented guys who had some good TV matches and stuff. But man, 1995, for the most part, was such a just a terrible year for WWE and also for WCW. 1995, at least in this country with the two big promotions, I can't speak for Japan or Mexico, but 1995 was the shits because you had WWF, like I just talked about, and you had WCW. And WCW at that point with Hulk Hogan and the Macho Man, it was them against the world. They were bringing in giants left and right for Hogan to slay. The Dungeon of Doom. Oh my God, the Dungeon of Doom. Oh my God. As bad as that year was here in this country, we should all be lucky we even had an Attitude Era or a Monday Night Wars. It's amazing that the wrestling business in this country even survived 1995. I want to give a quick note here on Steve Austin. I actually send condolences to Steve Austin. He broke the news at the end of his podcast this week that his dog, Hershey the Wonder Dog, she was a chocolate lab that he had for like a long time, like 12, 13 years, passed away. I guess her doctor found a tumor on her heart. It was really aggressive. Originally, they gave the dog 3 months to live, and I guess she only lasted about 3 days before he and his wife had to make the call to put her down. It was so sad listening to him talk about that dog. Like, you could tell he was trying hard not to lose it on the air. He used to post videos all the time online of him and Hershey, like on the ranch, on the Broken Skull Ranch. It's a cute dog. I mean, I've never had a dog. I've had cats, you know, and the one that we had to put to sleep many, many years ago. I mean, that was one of the worst days of my life. Losing a pet absolutely sucks. If you've ever had a pet, you know exactly what I'm talking about. And he seemed really close to that dog and had her for a long time. So I was very sorry to hear that. We're going to wrap things up here. I've gone longer than I expected. Long show. Big show here this week. One more quick plug for the Justin Roberts interview. It is pushed to the feed. But if you want, you could check it out on YouTube as well. Give the video a like. Give the YouTube channel a subscribe. That'd be nice. But thank you again for all the positive feedback to it. And again, tweet Justin too after you hear the interview. If you like what you hear, tweet him at Justin Roberts and me and let us both know if you enjoyed it. And thank you to TV Tracks as well for showing some love to the interview and getting some clips up on his channel. The paper shredder story was the one that really, I had to ask him about that because when I read that in the book, I really did. I was like, is this a joke? I kind of thought it wasn't, but I had to be sure. So I said, you know what, I got to ask him about that. And when he told the paper shredder story, the quote-unquote suggestion box, I'll let you guys listen to it if you haven't heard it yet. But man, if that doesn't tell you everything you need to know about what they think behind the scenes in that company, about other people's ideas, I don't know what does. To me, that's the greatest illustration of all. So definitely check that interview out. Don't forget the SummerSlam meetup is SummerSlam weekend. That's Saturday, the day of NXT TakeOver, August 19th, 2 p.m. at the KBH Beer Hall. King's Beer Hall in Brooklyn, New York, just a few blocks away. A hop, skip, and a jump, as they say, away from the Barclays Center, if you are headed to the show that night. And we will, now, the plan for next weekend is to have the show up normal time. That is the plan. I'm not sure what's going to happen. I am determined to do a show, because I haven't missed one in 7.5 years. So I have a wedding to go to, family wedding. I'm driving up upstate Friday, staying over. I have no idea what my weekend is going to look like. And then the situation with my mother, I don't know what's going on with her. It's a mess right now. I'm trying to still kind of just head down, focus, keep doing my thing, keep getting the shows out. If anything changes, I'll let you guys know on Twitter, probably, Facebook. Follow me on Twitter at Solomonster. Any updates, I'll give you guys there as I get them. So if things maybe, if the show goes up a little late, a little early, again, I'll let you guys know that. But there will be a show, episode 507 at some point next weekend. I got to get the hell out of here because I have to go, over to the hospital. And hopefully Mama Monster can get checked out. If not today, then hopefully by tomorrow. Fingers crossed. Check out the new shirts on ProWrestlingTees.com. The Solo Mountie shirt. There'll be a Mama Monster shirt that goes up in the next few days as well. Until then, be well. Stay safe. Thank you very much for all of your support, all of your kind words. It means a lot to me. It means a lot to us. More than you know. So again, thank you, and I will see you back here again next weekend. Until then, take care, guys.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. The Solemn Monster sounds off.
Mundo goes to leave, and Taya says, wait, aren't you going to put any pants on? He just goes, no time for pants, and he walks off. That also happens to be Randy Orton's philosophy in life. My philosophy, too. You see, you don't know if I'm wearing pants right now or not, do you? You can't see. I could be wearing nothing right now for all you know. No time for pants.
The Monster sounds off.
Since 2007, The Solemn Monster sounds off. Available at thesolemnmonster.com, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, and more.
Solo Monsters sound off.